atop the skyline of downtown Chicago to 38 states and Canada. Your host for this evening, Justin Kaufman.
Will tonight be the end of the impeachment trial in the Senate? The answer, no. They said no to witnesses, so what's stopping Republicans from finishing the deal? Does the newest John Bolton revelations have Republicans worried about what might come after the acquittal? And out with it, Bolton. Give us all the info. This isn't a reality show. It's an impeachment trial, right? Right. The coronavirus continues to have the world on edge as it's reached the UK. Airlines across the board are canceling flights, and there's even questions about the Olympic Games in Tokyo. Although even the coronavirus doesn't want anything to do with those cardboard beds. And this Sunday, it's the Super Bowl, closest spread in history, and we're not talking about the bean dip. Could it be a high-scoring game? What's the over-under on Mahomes' TDs and calories in those potato skins? I'll take the under, because the under's delicious. Welcome to 720 WGN. It's Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight in this beautiful Friday. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. We've got a jam-packed show, lots to talk about tonight. So jump on the line if you'd like to, and we'll get started right now. What a week in Springfield. Our big story has to do with, of course, the news that former Senator Martin Sandoval was pled guilty to bribery charges and is cooperating with the feds. He pleaded guilty to taking bribes from a red light camera company. And then today, Trib article has this nugget. Disgraced state Senator Martin Sandoval aided a political donor by pressuring IDOT, the Illinois Department of Transportation, to use asphalt material suspected of causing new roads to crack. If you're wondering, well, what's the big deal about corruption? There you go. Cracked roads because a dude, I know, allegedly took cash. How about we say that? But, I mean, that's just got to make you just incensed. Then you had the state of the state where Governor Pritzker preached about ethic reforms. But were they the right ethic reforms? Sure, we need better rules for lobbying. Sure, corrupt politicians shouldn't get bribed. But what was missing from the governor's speech? Well, what was his stance on maybe the most corrupt partisan politic move of all? Gerrymandering. In some strange, archaic way, the party that is in power gets to write the district maps for the state of Illinois, therefore writing maps that keep them in power. It's best said like this. In Illinois, politicians get to pick their own voters. To be fair, it's not just here. It's in most states, and it's not just one party. It's both. But if we truly want to get rid of political corruption, a great place to start is to curb unlimited power that usually leads to politicians believing they are above the law. According to a recent poll, the people of Illinois overwhelmingly support redistricting reform, like 74%. So why isn't it being done? Madeline Dubik has been advocating for fair maps. She's a longtime political editor in Chicago, years at the Daily Herald. She now runs Change Illinois. Change is a coalition for honest and new government ethics, and she joins me on the line. Madeline, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
Great to talk with you. So let's get into this. Were you surprised that this wasn't brought up by the governor in the state of the state?
I was disappointed, I will say that, because the governor talked about it quite a bit when he was campaigning and said unequivocally that he supported an independent redistricting commission. And so I hope to get lots of people to help me persuade him to get more engaged and active in this issue because, when you stop and think about it, probably a dictionary definition of conflict of interest is when politicians draw their own maps.
Where does it come from, Madeline? Because this is not new. This is something that's been going on for years.
No.
And there's a ton of court cases about it. But where did this idea come from that this was a good idea to have politicians in power draw their own maps?
I think it actually dates back to the days of James Madison and Alexander Hamilton and all those guys. So it has been around for quite a while. And, I guess it's human nature to want to hold on to what you got when you've got a good thing going, right?
Mm-hmm. And we've seen this issue play out in other states. Like I said, there are court cases. And a lot of times, I think it's always an error, but you'll see people who are rabid on the other side saying, this is always something Republicans do, or oh, this is always something Democrats do. They both do it. Whoever's in power
Absolutely.
Wants to be in charge. This is not something that's specific to one party.
Yep, I have been watching this and around long enough to have actually covered it when Republicans did it when they had the power in 1990 in Illinois. And you're right, you know, it's happening all across the country. Nationally, Democrats are trying to raise a lot of money off of it and motivate their base because Republicans do it in a lot of other states around us. But here in Illinois, it happens to be the Democrats who have the supermajority. And so they're the ones who are doing it. And, you know, many of them recognize that it's not right and they want to change it. And there are a few who don't want to see anything change. Mm. So we've got to get in there and really put some people power on this and some public pressure on it to get it done.
Well, I'll play devil's advocate in the way and say the victor go the spoils, right? That's the idea that if you have the power in Springfield, you are the majority party, that you get to make the rules. And that's how it's been drawn up for years.
Well, but that's not democratic with a small d, you know. That is dictatorship, and that's not how we're supposed to run things. It's, you know, when you have a system like that, that is where corruption is really born, because people who know that the seats have been drawn for them, they literally walk into these back rooms with lists of addresses of people they want in their district or out of their district. That's rigging the system from the get-go. And then you have people like Senator Martin Sandoval or Rep. Luis Arroyo, who just got in trouble with the federal government for corruption. You know, what allowed them to think that they were going to be able to get away with that and did get away with it for so long? Mm-hmm. Well, it was the fact that they had safe seats and no competition. You know, we have this sort of control and power where politicians are drawing their own lines. You have a situation where policies that we might think are good are not getting fair hearings. And you have people who feel they can act with impunity.
Yeah. So, Madeline Dubik's joining me. She's the executive director over at Change Illinois, which is Change stands for the Coalition for Honest and New Government Ethics. What would it take to get a fair map through, meaning an independent map commission or someone who's not a politician to draw these maps up? Because I don't know too many politicians personally, but what I do know, I guess stereotypically, is they don't like to give up power. How do you get this to become independent and not drawn up by the majority party?
You know, it's, as I said, it's human nature that you don't want to give up the power that you have when you know you've got a good thing, and this is really the foundation of it all. But it's also, as I said, the foundation for where the corruption begins in Illinois. And so if we're going to try to improve our ethics in Illinois, the first way to start is by having independent citizens draw the maps and not politicians. And so we just got to keep making that argument and demonstrating that poll after poll after poll shows that this is what people want and this is what they expect. And, you know, it's a tough battle, but I think that we have more going for us this time through than ever before. We've got the governor, who I hope will live up to his campaign pledge. We've got a mayor in Mayor Lori Lightfoot in the city of Chicago, who is an ardent believer in an independent process. And we have this sprawling, looming federal corruption investigation. Mm-hmm. So we've tried this a couple times before through trying to collect voter signatures to get it on the ballot, but the Illinois Constitution doesn't really allow for that to happen. So that's been rejected a few times. So the last few years, we've been trying to persuade the lawmakers to vote to put it on the ballot themselves.
See. Well,
and so we'll be doing that again in introducing it in the next few weeks. And, you know, this is a time when a lot of them have to stand for election. And so people ought to pay attention to what they say about this particular topic and whether they back up their words with actions.
It's a great trick in not just Illinois, but other places. But Chicago and Illinois love this, where there's only a couple of things you can put on a ballot. So they automatically say, let's ask them if the hot dog could be the official hot dog of Chicago. And then they put that on there so we don't actually deal with the stuff that needs to be dealt with. My last question for you. The one thing we talked about last night, I got a lot of calls and texts on this, was just the idea that is it smoke and mirrors here when we're talking about ethics reform, and there's a lot around ethics, and it seems to be all about lobbying, which needs to be taken care of, and also about bad apples, which need to be taken care of. This was a campaign promise. You are very articulate in telling us what the issue is. Is it smoke and mirrors that they're not talking about this?
Is it smoke and mirrors that they're not talking about it?
Yeah, I mean, is it smoke and mirrors that ethics reform is around lobbying and bad apples, and this doesn't get brought up?
Well, I think it's diversion. Yeah, I mean, I definitely think there's some diversionary tactics going on here. I think that the legislative leaders want to keep this control and this power. This is where if people are not happy with the legislative leadership in Illinois, this is what they want to cling to more than anything else. And this is the one thing that would truly start to chip away. Mm. It is the foundation upon which everything else is built.
So
we all have to make our voices heard and our thoughts known and be willing to fight for what's right.
Right. Madeline Dubek is the executive director over at Change Illinois, longtime political editor in Chicago, years at the Daily Herald. Change means Coalition for Honest and New Government Ethics. Madeline, great to talk to you. Thanks for joining me tonight.
Great to be with you, Justin. Thank you.
All right. 312-981-7200. She said it. She's the best. You can't be more articulate than that to say this is the issue in the state of Illinois. If you dealt with fair maps and you took out the ability for legislative leaders to create their own maps in their own districts so that they never can be voted out. If you take away that power, then maybe they have to start being a little bit more on the up and up. 312-981-7200. What would it take? When you hear Madeline talk like that, are you thinking about, hey, oh, wow, now I see it clear now. We got to get this on the ballot. Or are you like, you know what, this is more garbage, more Chicago way, more corrupt Illinois politicians. And don't make it about parties. Because I love it when I hear Bill Brady or Leader Durkin down in Springfield saying, oh, this is terrible, we need to change this. Because the minute they get power, they're not going to, well, we'll change it after we get ours. Because as Madeline said in the 90s, Republicans were doing this. 312-981-7200. Let's talk about Springfield and how we can root out corruption here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight here on 720 WGN. Got a great show lined up as we talk about Springfield. I was thinking maybe we can, last night we were talking about a cult pizza club that goes to different places, and we, as listeners, and me and Pete Zimmerman, the producer, we all go together and try these places out. But then we can add the conversation at the pizza place will be about fair maps. So pick an awesome pizza place, and then we'll talk about how we can root out Springfield corruption. The deal? I think it's a deal. Now this club is coming together. We'll invite speakers and a whole bit. I am blown away by this story. I think that fair maps, I don't know. It always seems to be like boring maps. Who likes topography? Nobody likes that stuff. No, redistricting. What does that even mean? But boy, man, when you think about the fact that Martin Sandoval does not have to worry about anything he's doing, he can be brazen and take bribes and set up shell companies and do everything he can because he doesn't have to worry about running for re-election. Because the powers that be that run the Democratic Party have redistricted the area so that he gets to choose who his voters are. Down to the address? I like Joe. It's like when you're in Little League draft. You're like, you know, I'll take Pete, I'll take Miles, I'll take Joe. You can have the other guys. You can have the kid who plays right field. That's crazy to me. When you think of it that way, then you totally understand. And that's the one thing that's off limits to be talked about. And it's a little bit disappointing as the governor got up there and talked about bad apples and ethics reform and ethics this and ethics that and ethics reform. The one that's standing right in front of us, it's the foundation that starts the ethical lapses, just gets forgotten about. And we're going to talk about that because Democrats are in charge. I guarantee if the Republicans ran the state house and the governor was a Democrat, Governor Pritzker, the first thing he'd be talking about, we need to have fair maps. I don't know. That to me is a big one. I think that if you're trying to figure out, peel back the layers and talk about what makes Illinois such a corrupt state, that can be up there with a lot of other things, but maybe number one on the list. Thanks to Madeline for coming on tonight to talk about that. 312-981-7200. Coming up after the break, let's talk a little bit about coronavirus. Airlines are canceling and suspending routes to and from China. And I read all this, I read as much as I could from business sites. This is one of my pet peeves when we have our summit, our pizza club summit about the internet, about reading news. Everything in the business world, Financial Times, Barron's, Crain's, it's all behind a paywall. Because they know they got uber super readers. But I'll see a headline that says, oh, you know, the airlines are tanking in their first quarter projections because of coronavirus and other things. You go, oh, what are the other things? Click through. Ah, no, you're not getting further than this, buddy. You want to learn about what those other things are, you got to pay me right now. $50. That's what essentially happens. It's very prevalent in the business journalism community. But it's a fascinating look at the fact that the coronavirus has caused a lot of havoc for the airlines. But you have to ask the question, with David Schaefer in here as an airline expert or reporter, he's been on with us a couple of times now, and we've talked about how they're getting closer and closer to the sun when it becomes this idea of, you know, basic economy. Or what it, you know, you're going to pay $50 extra for a bag and this, that, and the other. And you're already deciding whether or not you're going to go on that trip instead of maybe doing something that might be a road trip or not doing it at all. Now, with the coronavirus and the fact that no one knows how this thing, you know, where it's at, and quarantine people getting off planes, all that kind of stuff, screenings at the airport, it's making people think twice. Then you add on top of it, I saw the story today. They're calling the Greta effect. Greta Thunberg, the 16-year-old climate activist from Finland, Sweden, forgot where she's from, has having an impact in Europe. It's called flight shaming. That the airline industry is one of the worst when it comes to the environment, to climate change and air pollution, and they don't care. They could dump in diesel fuel on playgrounds in L.A. They don't care. It's like, we got to do it. And she has been making this an issue, and European officials are like, listen, we are seeing a downturn starting to be mentioned by American airlines. I don't mean American airlines. I mean the United States of America airlines. That this is coming to the United States. So the whole package means something. Are we at the point where we're at the breaking point when it comes to the efficiency, the price, the impact? Then you throw a virus on top and you're like, I'm out. So I guess the question to you is, are you changing your plans for the immediate future based on any of those? I mean, were you at the point where you're like, I'm so done with it. I can speak freely for myself. I told you on this program, flying to New York when I had to go there for my friend's wake. And it was with a week out. The flights were ridiculously expensive. And that was for basic economy. If I want to bring a bag, it'd be over the top expensive. Impossible. And I'm at the point now with everything that's happening with coronavirus, and then the fact that now that's going to be the reason why the airlines tell you that their projections are down. The quarter one is going to come in, they say it was a virus, when it wasn't a virus. It's the fact that we're getting sick and tired of being nickel and dime every which way we go. So let's talk about that. Are you making different plans? Are you changing the way you look at travel? Are you saying, you know, we used to go here, but I'm not going there anymore? This is my issue with the airlines. Let's get it out on the table. What are the issues with the airlines you have? 312-981-7200. We'll do that right after the break here. And coming up, Adam Davidson is here. Adam Davidson, a longtime writer. He's the guy who co-founded Planet Money. He's written a new book called The Passion Economy. And he says that the economy that we knew in the 20th century was not the American economy. It was an aberration. It was a blip. The real economy is now. And it's the same as the economies of the 19th century, 18th century, 17th century in America. It's all about the hustle, and it's all about the passion. The economy is supposed to reward creativity. For some reason, in the 80s and 90s, it wasn't doing that. But it's back today. 312-981-7200. Those are the segments we got coming up. And we'll talk NBA All-Star Game. We're going to talk Super Bowl. Al Genie, the professor, our resident philosopher, is going to come and talk about humility and gratitude. That's coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. We got a full show tonight. Justin Kaufman here, 720 WGN. Stay with us. Well, it's almost like the Sun-Times and Tinas Fondelis were listening to the program and decided to break news about Springfield. Just in the Sun-Times right now, story about a raid, a state police raid on Speaker Madigan's Capitol offices. It's not really about Mike Madigan, but the Illinois State Police are investigating allegations, including sexual misconduct and stalking, against former state representative Jack Franks, who now is a McHenry County Board chair. Franks denies any wrongdoing, but they executed a search warrant, the Illinois State Police, on Wednesday. While this was happening, right after the Governor Pritzker was delivering his State of the State in the packed Capitol building. Sun-Times got the search warrant from the Freedom of Information Act. Police requested personnel, human resources, and other files containing information, this quote, containing information related to allegations of wrongdoing or misconduct by former Illinois State Representative Jack Franks. It also asked for, quote, reports or complaints related to sexual misconduct, harassment, stalking, or other misconduct by Franks. Now, again, Jack Franks denies any wrongdoing. He hasn't been charged. I want to make that very clear. We're just reading and getting you up to speed on a Sun-Times article about a Freedom of Information Act, about a search warrant that was executed by the Illinois State Police on Wednesday. The article just came out mere minutes ago by the great Tinas Fondelis, who comes on this program, who writes for politics, writes about Springfield in the Sun-Times. Franks told the Sun-Times that he was unaware of the search warrant and has not been notified by anyone about any matter. The Speaker's office on Friday did say that a complaint was first received about alleged sexual harassment involving an employee of the Speaker's office and a former state representative on November 19, 2018. It's a year ago. Madigan and his chief of staff were notified and investigations began. I guess they're talking about this case. Based on the allegations, Madigan told his chief counsel to notify Franks that he faced various restrictions, including a prohibition against any contact with employees in his office. The Speaker also spoke to the victim to see if she was in danger, needed any accommodations. She requested confidentiality, did not participate in the investigation. The woman ultimately provided information, though, said the Speaker's office. In February 19, the Speaker's office determined the harassment allegations were, quote, credible, and the Speaker asked the Illinois Secretary of State Police to ban Franks from entering the Capitol without an escort. So why did the police need a search warrant if it seems that the Madigan's office was cooperating or even leading an investigation? Interesting. 312-981-7200. That's an interesting story. Jack Franks of the McHenry County Board chair now. He left. He was big on Blagojevich. Remember that? Against Blagojevich? Anyway, we'll keep an eye on that. Maybe we can talk to Tina later, or we can just... Obviously, this is a Friday night story if there ever was one. 312-981-7200. The story that I want to talk about was flying. We've seen with the coronavirus and the first quarter projections for American airlines, not the traditional or not the trademarked American airlines, but the four big airlines, it's going to be trouble. The stocks are down today. The stoppage of flights will have an impact on the bottom line, no doubt. All airline stocks are down. Looks like this outbreak, the coronavirus, could sink first quarter projections. There's a worry that many may not choose to fly, even if it's not to China, for fear of being in close quarters, etc. Or is it more than that? In Europe, airlines are starting to feel the crunch of what's being called flight shaming. I've never heard of this before, but flight shaming. It's part of the Greta effect. Greta Thunberg, a young environmental activist, has zeroed in on the environmental impact of the airlines. Or maybe more people are just like me and just fed up on the way that the airlines have decided to do business, nickel and diming you at every turn. So whether it's saving the environment, being fed up with pricing, or stories like this one, couple knocked off flight for body odor, which they're suing them. That happened last year. Are you rethinking your plans to fly the friendly skies or any skies, since that's probably trademarked? 312-981-7200. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Max Armstrong, who's standing by. The great Max Armstrong. Hi, Max.
Hey, Dustin. I always enjoy hearing you. I'm in North Carolina listening to you today.
Oh, my gosh.
Driving
I'm
down the road.
Honored to talk with you. What do you think about this, about the idea of people thinking twice about flying?
It's crazy. It drives me nuts. Of course, I'm on an airplane every week, almost every week of the year. And I started seeing the masks showing up, of course, at O'Hare a week ago tonight. And then I was on Southwest three times this week. And I have to tell you, on the domestic travel, you don't see many empty seats yet. I mean, people are still flying a lot. You know, it's so much overreaction. That's my personal opinion. I mean, if you look at the distribution of the cases in the world, obviously there's a concentration of them in China, minuscule in Europe. Almost nothing else outside of China in Asia, and virtually nothing in the United States. And 8,000 people have died of the flu in the United States
this year.
8,000, that's something to be worried about.
Yeah, right.
Not the coronavirus.
That's what we talked about. But here's a question for you, Max. As a frequent flyer, as someone who is in airplanes three, four times a week, do you notice a change in the way that people are traveling and the way that it's being priced and everything that we've talked about in this program, where it almost feels like the airlines are changing the way they strategize to get people on board?
You know, I'm not a good one to ask, probably, because I almost exclusively fly Southwest. I was on Southwest 98 times last year.
Wow.
And I only deviated a week ago tonight because I had a weather cancellation. And you know, I think it was the second time I'd been on United in 5 years, maybe, and American maybe twice in that period of time. So I'm not a good one to ask. Yeah. Southwest does not nickel and dime you.
Yeah,
you can check two bags for free. You can carry on two for free. And yet you still see, you know, people trying to bring on a footlocker into the plane and want somebody to help them lift it into the overhead. It drives me nuts. Check the darn bag.
Well, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to talk to you, Max. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate it.
I'm sounding like an old man.
I like it. No, you're the man to talk to about this. My last question for you.
And you didn't even ask about it.
I love it. I'm just loving it. Let me ask you. I was going to ask you. Take care. Let me ask you one more question before you go. Just about your experience in, you know, when we're talking about air travel. Do you feel when you're this much of a frequent flyer, and it doesn't matter what airline, in your case it's Southwest, that everybody around you you're not seeing any flights that are empty, but everybody around you is full bore, they're on board, there isn't sort of a question about whether or not they're going to do this? I mean, are you seeing frustrations or anything that's happening while you are watching or observing on your flights?
You mean related to the coronavirus?
Sure.
I mean, yes, you see masks. I mean, there was a guy sitting in front of me with a mask on, but I don't know if he was trying to limit what he's expelling into the cabin or if he was just protecting himself. But I noticed he pulled his mask aside to reach over for the cup that is on the stand on his seat, which is probably the dirtiest thing on the plane. You know, so this mask thing is getting a little bit crazy.
Absolutely.
Oh, but let the record show, it might help IBM. Their plants are cranking 24/7 to make masks.
Masks. That's the new product. Thanks, Max. I appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks for calling.
Hey, I always enjoy listening to you. Take care.
Wow, that's an honor. Mr. Max Armstrong joining us tonight. And he's right. I mean, he is a frequent flyer. And I still don't know the answer, and I get it from texts and everywhere else, too, just about whether or not the masks are for you, your protection, or for others. But I get answers to each different way that way. 815 says, you could not pay me to get on a plane right now. If I go somewhere than a day's drive away, I'll be checking out the Amtrak schedule. Yeah. My parents just did an Amtrak. They swear by the train. It takes a lot longer. Max Grinnell, when he was on, we were talking about State Street, the night that we were trying to figure out that snowstorm. He was on an Amtrak. Seems like a lot more people deciding that way. 847 Gwen in Jefferson Park. She says, ever since 9/11, it's been a major influence on me on getting in an airplane. Okay. But I going back to what Max was talking about, you know, people get really excited to grab onto one brand and they like one type of airline over another, and that's great. But I think what I have noticed as not being anywhere near the level of Mr. Armstrong in terms of, he's talking about being on 98 flights. I might take three or four. And even just booking one the other day, because I'm going back to New York coming up in February. And the same thing, I was angry with the process. I was angry at going to one of the sites that calls all the sites together and then seeing a price and then getting to the site and then being like, oh, that's not really the price. I mean, that's the price if you're an idiot. Like, you're not an idiot, are you, Mr. Kaufman? And I'm like, no. Oh, no, $75, sure, whatever. We would like to treat you well. Not too well. If you want to be treated well, we got another price for you. If that's really the future of flying. 312-981-7200. 317 says, maybe I'm crazy. What if we charge for overhead and made check bags free? The overhead is what's gotten out of hand. It's true. It's funny because I was just arguing with my wife because we're going to celebration, a memorial for my friend in New York, who I just mentioned passed. We went for the wake, but they waited a month for the memorial. And going out to New York, it's just for 2 days. It's a weekend. I'll be back for the show that Monday night. And it's going to be me, my wife, and my son. And I was like, what do we have to check anything? Put your pair of jeans and your t-shirt in that bag, a couple of toiletries, bring it on your shoulder. Let's go. My wife's like, no, there's three of us, you know. We've got the memorial. We got to wear a college shirt, that kind of stuff. I'm like, come on. I'm like, it'd be cheaper to go to the Gap in New York City and get myself a nice college shirt for the event than checking a bag because of it. That's kind of where we're at. But I lost that argument. We had to go main cabin, which is nothing. It's nothing. Main cabin is not. That's regular. It's not even regular. And still, after we said main cabin, we're still in the back row, last row. Maybe I just need to get tips from Mr. Armstrong about how to do it right. Seems like he knows what he's doing. 312-981-7200. There's a new definition of flight shaming that you're bringing up. I follow the flight shaming account on Instagram. It's really just about pictures and videos of people doing disgusting and ridiculous things on airplanes. Yes, that's flight shaming. But the flight shaming we're talking about is environmentalists who are trying to get you to stop taking the airplane. Joaquin Phoenix talked about this, right? In his acceptance speech at the Golden Globes. They cut him off, which was hilarious. They're talking about the environment. And that's when they're like, roll tape. hit the brass. But the what he was saying is, he was saying to his other celebrity superstars, we don't need to take private jets to Palm Springs every other weekend. We can find other ways to do this. And that's what Greta is saying as well in Europe, saying this is one of the problems. We're not that far away. We're train systems, everything. But we're jumping from plane, and this is causing our Earth's atmosphere to heat up. So that's the flight shaming we're talking about, as opposed to people picking their nose or taking off their shoes. Ugh! The worst. Or my favorite, when the plane stops and hits the gate and hit the button and 19 people get up and run to the front of the plane. The worst. My wife today, she flew to San Francisco in the morning. I got up, I don't remember when we even got out of here last night. I got up at the crack of dawn, 6 o'clock in the morning, to take her to the airport so she could fly to San Francisco. She said that she got into San Francisco and they kept her on the tarmac for an hour. They did not deplane for an hour because of gate clearances and things of that nature, which is also ridiculous and probably happens a ton. I don't know what it is, and I'm sure there are people out there that know much better than I, but when I fly west, when you fly mostly to San Francisco to Northern California, I feel like every single time I do it, it's delayed. I don't know why. Something's wrong every time you're going out to Oakland or San Francisco. All right. Justin, love your show. Thank you. Thanks. You rock. Safe travels. Well, okay. I appreciate it. Haven't really done anything yet. 312-981-7200. I never check a bag anymore. I used to be that stereotypical overpacker woman. Then I moved out of state and I was on an airplane all the time. Carry on all the way. Oh, there you go. It's kind of coming. This conversation is twisted into a, what's the etiquette of how to pack a bag? Much different than what we want to talk about, but I'll take it. All right, we'll take a break here. 312-981-7200. Coming up, Adam Davidson's going to talk about the new passion economy here at 720 WGN. 815 says, for my wife's 30th birthday back in 2015, I bought her first plane tickets. We went to Orlando. I tried to convince her to check some bags, get the full first-time experience. But even she knew to just carry on all the way. You know, I would love to hear your wife's experience about doing that for the first time at the age of 30. She probably has a great story to tell about her observations of the experience of air travel for the first time when you're a full-born adult. Let's go to Wayne. Wayne, you're on the show. What do you think of the status of air travel flying today?
Well, I've been doing it for years for business. I've got 2 million miles.
Wow.
And you do get a lot of perks when you're doing that. But what happens today is once the internet got involved in this thing, and everybody goes online and they go to the various sites that show, you know, the pricing. If you don't make the first page, if there's like five airlines, five prices on the first page, if you don't make the first page, you probably don't book the ticket. People don't go to the next page and the next page page. So the airlines have to back everything out of there they can to make sure they show the cheapest price to make the front page.
Right, so they fake it.
Then they start adding back.
Right.
Okay. And it's sort of a snowball downhill. It's self-defeating in a way. But if they don't make that first page, there's an 80% chance they won't book the ticket.
Right, right.
Now, the frequent flyer guys like me, I've got my airline that I use, and I use them all the time, and I get the perks. I'm not the guy they're after. They're after the guy that flies a couple times a year,
me.
Like you're talking about.
Right, right.
That's who they want to attract in, and they got to do it by making that front page on one of those internet sites.
Now, I understand they have to do that, Wayne, but there is something called, you know, Better Business Bureau, where, you know, it's false advertising. We've, at a certain point, it starts to feel a little bit like what the price is on the page is not what the price ends up being, and they seem to be skirting around that rule to be able to get people.
I know.
Right?
They don't put the taxes, they don't put the service charges, they don't put the security fees, they don't put any of that on there, and then they charge you for the bags, and by the time you're done adding it all up, I know.
Right. How do you think, Wayne, when you're flying as much as you do for business, do you see a different kind of flying experience from where you're at, from observing the way who's getting on the plane or how the airlines are operating? Even though you've got the frequent flyer stuff, do you notice a change in the way people are using airlines in 2020?
A little bit, but they're using them just as much.
Yeah.
They're not backing down. I listened to Max's comment a while ago. They're not backing down. The planes are pretty full.
Yeah.
There's a little bit more to figuring out how to get a better seat on the plane. And, you know, if you buy the real cheap ticket, then you don't get your seat assigned until they actually get ready to board.
Yeah, I know.
And there's all of those things that you've got to work around. But, no, people are still doing it.
Yeah. Thanks for calling, Wayne. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
There you go. Thanks, Wayne. I love it. I could sit here and talk to frequent flyers about the experience of flying as part of your daily business all night. I feel there's so much we can learn from people like that because, like Max and Wayne both said, you know, they got me pegged. They know the guy was like 3 or 4 flights a year, if that. Hard to do it on a schedule like this, right? You fly in, fly out. But I've gotten really good. I'm down to the wire where I am. I don't pack anything. I'm not a packer when it comes to flying. I'll tell you that right now. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We'll take one more call here, and then we'll wrap up and get ready for Vic's news. And then Adam Davidson coming up, which I'm excited about. He's great. An old pal of mine. He was spent a lot of time together in our 20s, and now he's moved on to be a writer for The New Yorker, co-founded Planet Money. He's one of the brilliant economic minds of today who is really breaking down the economy for guys like me. Matt's on the line. Matt, you're the guy who texted in about your wife's 30th, right?
Yes, indeed.
So was it an experience for her? She loved it? What was it like to watch her go through the experience of getting on a plane for the first time when she was 30 years old?
Well, it wasn't as drastic as I thought it was going to be. It was just really the whole fact that even she knew that checking the bags were going to be a gigantic pain in the you-know-what. The thing, too, is that we were leaving. It was in February. My boss at the time was over at the grocery store, and my manager was like, hey, check the Southwest, low-fare calendar. If you want to go do something cheap, look for January, February for these cities. And
right.
Orlando popped up, and I ended up we flew out of town and the night that there was a snowstorm was coming.
Oof.
And I decided 2 days earlier, like, you know what, let me check to see if that hour before flight is still the same price. And sure enough, it was. We land. I text my sister saying, when did the snow start? She says, about an hour after you left.
You so win. That's perfect. Great.
Now, granted, we land in Florida. It's like 11 o'clock because we took a late flight. It's drizzling rain. It's 40 degrees. I got hit with a sinus infection the day before, so the recycled air. My wife threw her back out the day before, earlier in the week, so the cold air. I mean, in the end, for both of us, round trip, grand total was $170.
Oh, that's amazing.
So, it was a steal. So,
well, thanks for calling, Matt. Really, that's awesome.
Yeah, no problem. So she got to go to Disney for the first time, too, but the day we left, of course, then it's 60 degrees and sunny.
Yeah, of course. That's how it always works. Thanks, Matt. Thanks for calling. There's always a flip side. I guess it's a great way to end it. Say that, you know what? You get a nice flight, but at the same time, then you throw your back out. 312-981-7200. Justin Coffin with you here on 720 WGN. We'll take a break here. Vic Vaughn's news is coming up. And then Adam Davidson in studio talking about his new book, The Passion Economy. Stay with us. Coming up, Adam Davidson's going to join us right at 8 o'clock here. And then we're going to talk a little bit about retail. That's amazing. There was finally a Tribune story talking about the first month of January 2020, just in this idea that so many retail places have shut down. Pier 1, Papyrus, Express, Bed Bath & Beyond, Baker Square. I mean, it seems like every night I had a joke going. One of the pieces last week where I'm like, it seems like it's becoming the store closing report. We'll talk about why, because when you see consumer confidence come out, consumer confidence is up. And I know automatically you're like, oh, well, everyone's shopping online. And that's part of it. But there's still a pretty healthy environment for shopping and retail. And people are still going to the brick-and-mortar stores. So what is causing, at the beginning of 2020, all of these stores to rethink their business strategy and to lay off and close a ton of stores? We'll have that conversation coming up. I'm sure you have thoughts on that. Talk about your habits and if you're still going to stores. 312-981-7200. But first, Adam Davidson is going to join us. The book is called The Passion Economy, The New Rules for Thriving in the 21st Century. We're talking about how the 20th century was all about uniformity. And the one thing about the 21st century economy is that you can do what you want and get paid for it. And that's really the goal, to hustle, find your passion, and do what you want, even if you work for a company, even if you're not an entrepreneur. And that's what we're going to talk about coming up here on the show with Adam Davidson, one of the co-founders of Planet Money. But first, Vic Vaughn's news. Welcome back to 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffman. Well, lots to talk tonight about the economy, and we have the guy to do so. Adam Davidson is a writer at The New Yorker. He's also the co-founder of Planet Money, and he's the author of the new book, The Passion Economy, New Rules for Thriving in 21st Century. Adam Davidson, a former Chicagoan. Good to see you, buddy.
Great to see you, Justin.
Yeah, it's awesome to have you.
An old friend of yours.
An old friend. All right, so let's get into this. Well, tell me about the passion economy. Let's get right into it.
So, as you know, much of my career for the last 20 years has been covering really bad things in the economy. The financial crisis, rising inequality, a lot of the pain so many people are feeling in this economy. And over time, I kept coming across these stories that kind of bucked that trend. People who seemed to be doing well, and well in a really specific way. People who were finding ways to do an old-fashioned career, like accounting or farming or marketing, but in a new and exciting and a way that could only happen now.
Yeah.
And at first, it was just kind of a curious oddity to note, but over time, I became a bit obsessed. I collected a bunch of these stories and started consulting a lot of the economists and other experts that I talk to regularly. And I came to realize that this is the same thing as the bad news, that these are flip sides of the same story, that we are in the midst of a massive transformation in the fundamental logic of our economy. 20th century was all about mass production. For most people, that meant being the same, being a good worker and an employee.
Yeah, uniformity, right.
Uniformity.
Right.
And now, for a whole host of reasons, that is flipped on its head. And that the very forces that ripped apart the 20th century economy, global trade, computer automation, robots, that outsourcing, are making a new way of life possible. They're hurting some people, but they're really creating this new way of life. And it's not a way of life that's only available to the very elite, to the, you know, 1%.
Almost the exact opposite. Stories you tell in the book, it's, yeah, the exact opposite.
It's the exact opposite. Yeah. And I made a point. I wanted people who, these weren't once in a generation geniuses. These weren't people born rich who went to Harvard and Stanford. These were like regular folks who just figured a few things out. And so, in the book, I tell a bunch of stories about these regular people, but then also try to reveal that each of them actually has figured out something profound about how the economy works these days that we all should learn from.
It's amazing, too, because you mentioned in the book that there's not a lot of study about what makes small business work and what makes it fail. And it's surprising to me that there's not more research or that economists are not focusing more on the small business. There are going to be big trends, other kind of things. Does that surprise you?
It really surprised me. I mean, when I started working on this project, I had all these like small business people who seemed to be doing well in an interesting way. And at first I was just like, oh, I'm going to go find out all those books that all those economists and business school professors have written about small business.
Yeah.
And I'm call around. And basically it doesn't exist. That first of all, much of the work of economics is just big, broad views of abstract units of human beings, but, you know, not real people.
Right.
And business schools tend to be much more focused on often either high growth, venture capital backed, you know, the sort of you become a billionaire or you go broke kind of business.
Yeah,
or
the Apple story, right?
The Apple story or the Google story.
Right.
Or, you know, finance, you know, becoming a investment banker, something like that, or becoming a manager. Very 20th century ways of succeeding. And there's very few, although I do profile one of the few business school professors who really just ask this fundamental question, which to me is the only question they should be asking, which is, for just a regular person in America, what should they do to have a comfortable, reasonable life without a lot of fear and risk economically? It seems like a reasonable question,
right?
That at least a few of them should be looking at.
Well, far too often economists and people who cover the economy, they do it in broad strokes. So the premise of the book, really, you're looking at how everyone's talking about the death of the middle class. Everyone's talking about robots are going to take your jobs. All the kind of stuff we hear nonstop in the media and our listeners hear all the time. Rarely do we hear stories of the stories that are in your book, these creative solutions, the way that people are figuring out places that, you know, they saw that their kid's chocolate bar wasn't, or, you know, they needed a different chocolate bar for the kid, whatever it might be. Why don't we hear those stories? Why? This seems like a positive story for our economy, yet I don't think anyone's ever focusing on it.
I think you're right. I think we're in a time where the story is a dark story. And there is a positive super elite story. You know, the stock market is at record highs, but, you know, we know that the vast majority of stocks are owned by the very, very richest 5 or 10% of Americans. There is low unemployment, which is good, but wages have not gone up particularly. So there is this kind of big macroeconomic story that's fairly positive. We are in a long growth period, but I don't think anyone would argue we're in a period of huge confidence and optimism about the future. And generally, and this is actually one thing economists are good at studying, generally people wildly overestimate the good times and they wildly overestimate the negative times. So part of what led to the financial crisis was that the period between 1982 and 2007 was a period of robust growth, just a few relatively short recessions, and the feeling like, hey, it's just all smooth sailing. We figured it all out. We're just going to keep growing and growing and growing. And people weren't asking the difficult questions that, if they had, would have forced them to reckon with both rising inequality and the subprime housing bubble, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a safe bet that if the general mood is overly dark, that's probably an exaggeration, too, in the other direction.
Right.
That, you know, certainly during the Depression, nobody was thinking, oh, the 1940s and 50s and 60s are going to be the greatest period of growth in all of human history. You know, that would have been inconceivable. I also think it's even more so because it's not just the tone. It's that the basic rules, the basic logic have changed. It's like on the level, I've been thinking a lot about farmers, say in 1900, when America was still largely agrarian, watching their kids go off to the city, working in factories, and they're looking around, everybody's a farmer. All of human history, or at least all of, you know, 10,000 years of farming history, almost all human beings have been farmers. What are these kids going to do in the city? It only seems dark and ugly and like the death of something special. And it did take a generation or two for people to kind of understand, no, this is this new thing that's different from farming, but has a lot of benefits too. So I think we're a little bit early. I will say it's a weird week to be launching an optimistic book about the economy when there's an impeachment going on.
Adam Davidson is here. He is the author of The Passion Economy, The New Rules for Thriving in the 21st Century. We'll take a quick break. Come back. Adam Davidson here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Welcome back. 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman with you. Adam Davidson is here. He's the co-founder of Planet Money, the great podcast and website. Also the author of The Passion Economy, The New Rules for Thriving in the 21st Century. You have really made your name on being able to talk about the economy to real people. This is where Planet Money has won awards for this. I mean, you won the best awards that they give out. It's been you've got them. Where does that come from? Where did you get into the idea of talking about the economy, talking about finance, talking about small businesses, and doing it in a way that is not like everybody else?
Well, I want to make this a little personal. First of all, I just want to point out to your listeners, I don't think you've won any of those awards.
No, none of them.
Okay.
I lived in the same building as you 25 years ago, so I feel like I kind of won some of those awards.
No, I wouldn't put it that way.
I feel like I was there for the early parts of your life.
I don't think you had an effect. No. Right, yeah. Right. But actually, I mean, what's interesting talking to you, because we were good friends in the mid-90s, and I don't think I ever talked about economics. It wasn't on my mind. It wasn't something I was thinking about. And it really wasn't, weirdly enough, until for Marketplace Radio, I went to cover the Iraq War. And oddly, you're covering a war that we're all told is essentially a religious battle. And I learned, it's all about economics, that so much of the meat of the fight between Sunni and Shia, between Iran and Iraq, between Israel, and is about basic questions of, can my kids succeed? How do I make money? How does this country work? And I really fell in love with economics. I had been a kind of general services reporter, producer, you know, working with you at WBEZ, working at the Trib, working at This American Life. And I like telling that story because I eventually really developed what seems to be, I mean, it's now been a while, what may become a lifelong passion in being a storyteller about economics. And as I like to joke, there's lots of people who know economics better than me. There's lots and lots of people who are better storytellers than me, but it's a nice Venn diagram.
It's amazing to think about, because you never think of someone who reports on economics or reports on the economy to be a good storyteller.
That's the trick.
That's the trick, right? It's all tickers and it's all, I got to tell you what the numbers were today, and I'm going to talk in this business jargon. So just like your book, The Passion Economy, you found a niche that people obviously desperately wanted.
And I think tellingly, it's a niche that I didn't have to be the best. I don't have to be a genius. I don't have to I've created economics or something. It's just, I think so many of us have two or three unlikely combinations of interests that overlap. And I mean, you've always been, deeply obsessed with sports. Mm-hmm. You really love news, Chicago news, and you also really love comedy and have studied comedy. And that's, a guy like that maybe should be a radio host. And
we'll see. Jury's still out on that.
Yeah, the jury's still out on that. Right. But I think finding your passion, I mean, one thing I worry about when talking about this is, do people think, oh, I don't have a passion, so this doesn't apply to me. I think it takes a long time. Very few people are fully formed at 15 or 20 with my passion is this. It takes a while. And it's an investment that's worth investing in. And when I look back at, I mean, you and I both in our 20s did a lot of different things. We both were very curious and kind of we were on mic, off mic, doing a million different things. And I think that kind of exploration helped both of us figure out who we were and how who we were as different from others, which is not to say that we're better than others in some huge way. It's just, oh, here are the areas that we're
makes
unique.
Me unique.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you talk about that in the book, too, because you right at the beginning, you kind of set out, here are the things you need to know about yourself or what you really need to know if you want to get into this, what kind of person you are, you know, who's your customer, those kind of things. And then you go and launch into telling other people's stories. For you, I'm always blown away by the fact that it almost feels like people who report on the economy or economics, they speak in a language that's coded. They speak in a language that's not for me. Then every time I'm like, I think that's good. I mean, is that they said it's good then. And I wonder, I keep seeing this over and over. Politicians have adopted this. Both sides use it all the time. That it's almost the language that's not for us. It's not for the layman who's just reading the newspaper or reading a certain website to understand what's happening with money in this country.
Yeah, and that is obviously an obsession of mine. I mean, I find it horrible. It's boring, but it's also it's weaponized boredom. And part of it is deliberate. I mean, part of it is that there are specialists in economics, finance. These are complicated things, and all specialties, like all medical specialties or engineering or whatever you think of, need technical language. But that really should not override all the discourse. Wall Street does deliberately make things opaque. And one of the main purposes of Wall Street and investment firms and finance companies in general is to create what they claim are unique products that so that they can charge a premium, and they want to make it seem like, oh, this is a mysterious magical thing that nobody can understand. So there's an actual financial benefit to obscuring. But to me, the financial crisis should have ended this whole thing.
Right.
Like everybody who talked on news, like, well, the Dow Jones went up by 3% today because of everyone was wrong. Everyone was fully wrong about the fundamental nature of our economy. So, like, that's a moment for, like, absurdism. Like, to be like, well, the Dow Jones today forced us to realize that we literally have wasted our entire career on a bunch of nonsense and know nothing about how. So, to me, it's actually a reflection of the passion economy itself, that the mass production economy of the 20th century, people had specific functions. Those functions added up to most people having, you know, they would get raises, they'd get promotions, they'd do well over the course of their life. They didn't have to take much mastery over the broader conditions of their economic life. So they didn't really need to know that much about the economy.
Right. They knew they needed to get their paycheck and put food on the table for their family.
Exactly. Right. And you know, there were a handful of ways of doing it, most of them involving get a job and get paid for the job and then try and get a promotion. So now I think we are actually going back to the way most people have lived for all of human history, which is you have to hustle. The world is a world of hustling. Most people who've ever lived had to hustle for their daily bread by farming, by trading, by figuring out some way to make a buck. And I think there's a lot of tools now that no one else had in the past, helpful, great tools. But we do all need to take a bit more responsibility. That doesn't mean everyone needs to be a small business owner or an entrepreneur. This can happen in a company. But you need to take more responsibility for understanding the logic of the economy overall and the place you work, the way you make money. How are you adding value in the economy? How do you capture that value correctly? I think that's part of the change we're going through, and it's tricky. I mean,
people can understand that, though. They can understand hustle. You're broadcasting to Chicago right now.
Right,
it's all about the hustle. They get that. The thing, they wonder if the rules are stacked against them. That if they're going to hustle and they're going to do things, that there's always going to be a top level 5-10%, like you're talking about, the rich, the elite, whoever, who are going to change the rules and take the rug from underneath them. That's, I think, the worry as people get more attached to the economy they want to live in.
Yes. I mean,
what happened in 2008.
Yeah, I would look at it in a few different ways. First of all, the rules are stacked against you. And actually, a lot of the newer economic research reveals that the rules were kind of even more stacked against than people realized all along. And that's a real issue. And that's ultimately, I think, a political issue. But there are ways of thriving now. unfortunately or fortunately, they don't involve all that much looking backwards. So the kind of, we just need to go either, you know, the left-wing version of we need to have a really high minimum wage, we need to have much stronger unions, etc. Those may be good things in and of themselves, but they're not going to solve the problem. Or the right-wing version, we need more coal and less trade, and that's not, certainly not, if anything, we need the opposite of mm-hmm. both those things. So the looking backwards to me is just the wrong move. It's like in 1920 saying we need to farm more sorghum or something like it. No, that's not the solution.
That's not the solution.
So there has to be a looking forward. I do think the bad news for many, good news for some, is life is, I would expect, permanently less certain than the 20th century. The 20th century really was a blip in the human experience. Most life throughout history has been very uncertain, tied to the weather, tied to political forces beyond your control. The 20th century provided, at least in a handful of rich countries, a kind of stability that, broad-based stability that's just unprecedented. I think that's gone for good. I think so. I don't think we're switching from that to this new thing, and then nobody has to think about it for 100 years. But this new thing will develop its own logic that people will come to understand. They will understand how to, but it will involve that hustle. It'll involve paying, all right, what am I doing that's valuable? Who are the people out there who think it's valuable? And how do I get the money from them to me? and that, even if you're a schmuck with a job in the marketing department of a bank, you still should be thinking that way, because that's how you're going to articulate your value to your boss. That's how you're going to look for other opportunities in other job in other companies or other industries. And that wasn't necessary. The marketing department of a bank in 1960, or the accounting department of
you didn't need to have that skill.
You didn't even think about it. It was irrelevant.
It's great to see you, man.
It's always great to see you.
Adam Davidson, the book is called The Passion Economy, The New Rules for Thriving in the 21st Century. Adam, creating such a career, award-winning career, co-award-winning with me.
I do want to just let your listener know that you often claim credit for awards that you literally had nothing to do
with. Well, I mean, I did, in the sense that I was there, and I think I helped form who you were going to be.
Here's what I'll say. No joke, you and I had a lot of fun that eventually led to us being who we are today,
there
without question.
All right, see? There should be a little asterisk.
And I overcame that and won awards.
The book, The Passion Economy, The New Rules for Thriving in the 21st Century. Adam, great to have you, man.
Thanks. Great to be here.
312-981-7200. Justin Kaufman with you here on 720 WGN. With you till 11 o'clock tonight. Thanks to Adam Davidson for stopping by. The Passion Economy, The New Rules for Thriving in the 21st Century. Some good points about how this economy in the 21st century mirrors what the American economy has been like for years, for decades. It actually was more than centuries. It was the 20th century in the 70s and mostly the 80s into the 90s that were the aberration. It was not like the rest of time. And now we're getting back to the rest of time. Small business, entrepreneurs, passion, leading, doing things that you want to do and finding a niche in this society for you to do it. He has examples in his book. That's the whole idea. He tells 10 different stories. One is a dad who, his kid needed a specific kind of food, found that it couldn't be. I've heard this story a million times, by the way. Realized, looked around, said, hey, you know, I've got this, my son's got this food allergy. He can only eat this kind of thing. No one provides that. I'm going to provide it. Finds his way and creates a small business and finds a living out of it. That seems to be the American way. 312-981-7200. Let's stay on business. I'm interested in retail. This story came out in the Trib today, and it's actually been everywhere about the month of January as it wraps up here. Over 1,000 stores have closed in the month of January. Think about that. In just the month of January in 2020. At the end of 2019, we're like, oh, this has been a terrible year for retail. This has been an astronomically terrible day or month for retail. Pier 1 Imports, getting rid of a ton of stores. Papyrus, closing up shop. Bed Bath & Beyond. Express. Baker's Square. We talked about Bar Louie this week. Remember, we talked about how Bar Louie's closing up shop. But consumer confidence and consumer spending, those numbers are through the roof. That's a lot of what the president talks about. And you see these consumer indexes and confidence numbers that say that the economy's on its way up. It's roaring. People want to go out and buy. And we all get it that a lot of that is being done online now. We hear these stories all the time. But when you really truly look at the numbers and they break down, yeah, but they're still buying in brick and mortar stores. People are still going out to these stores. So why are they closing up shop? And one of the thoughts I had today, Pete and I were talking in the office, was that the retail experience is not dying. Retailers are. The retail experience has to evolve. There are a lot of retailers that might be, like we're talking about in the passion economy, just I think of some of the stores or general stores or specific stores that are selling things that people want. They're evolving. There's customer service. They're changing their brand. They're marketing into a different demographic. And they're winning. Maybe people don't want to shop at these particular brands anymore. Maybe it's not what the store we always hear. Oh, geez, you know, Amazon came in and just killed our business. Before that, everybody wanted candles and oversized pillows. So I there's a lot that goes into it because these businesses are on the hook, of course, for employing a lot of people and keeping families afloat, especially in smaller towns. And they're going through a restructure. And the question is, why? Are they going through a restructure because the economy has changed? Or are they going through a restructure because they didn't? 312-981-7200. You still shop in stores? I know my family does. I wish my brother's a good example of a guy who's probably 40 years old. Who doesn't shop anywhere. He's an Instacart guy who goes to Amazon, gets his groceries delivered by Peapod. He's more of an agoraphobic kind of dude who doesn't want to go out to the stores. Now, I don't blame him. Actually, if I could do the same, I would. My family, with my wife, It's Saturday morning, it's errands time. We got to go to North and Clybourne. Oh, worst. It's just the sweat is dripping down my forehead thinking about where I'm going to park and what store we're going to go into. But it is all about the retail experience. Hey, we're going to the grocery store. Every Sunday we go to the grocery store. So we're still doing it. Not saying we're rolling out to Bed Bath & Beyond every 2 days to get our shower caddy, whatever they're selling there. But I wonder about this idea that is it the retail experience that's dying, or is it the retailers, or is it just, you know, as the world changes, you got to change with it. So do you still find yourself shopping in stores? That's the question tonight. I know it seems pretty simple, but it's kind of 312-981-7200. I want to know if you are, because I think that my thesis that these stores are not adapting with the change that needs to happen in 2020. It's not that people are going online. You're still going to the stores. They need to change the way they operate before they go out of business. That's my thought. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 815 says, big corporations swallow these guys up. I get that. And that was the 90s argument, or the early 2000s. Remember that with Walmart and Target and all those places putting mom and pop hardware stores out of business? And there's something to be said about that. And there were a lot of documentaries produced at that time about predatory practices by big corporations. The idea that they would set the prices for distributors, or they would be the distributors themselves, and if you couldn't keep up with prices that would essentially put you out of business, then you couldn't do business with them. And that was a big problem for a lot of mom and pops. It wasn't that other people were choosing Walmart. That was a big part of it too, but they also were shifting and manipulating the distribution lines. I watched this whole documentary on it. You know me, I like to watch documentaries. Who doesn't, right? Get a little cab salve. Sit down. This is pre-Netflix. It's like the kind you had to order when you had to get a DVD. You know? So I just want to say, I'm not a Johnny come lately to the documentaries. 312-981-7200. Do you shop in the stores? Do they need a change? 224 says, thanks, Baker Square. Now I want a French silk and banana cream pie. I got to go 45 miles. But you're still getting it, right? I believe, 708 says, I believe that this technology and Amazon and all that's contributing to the losing of jobs, or the joys, I'm sorry, of going shopping, calling it, call whether it's by yourself or with others. I hate the fact that most of what you find, even when you read the labels, does not come from the USA. It comes from food products that are packaged in other countries. Well, that's a whole thing, yeah. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. That's a different story, but you know, we're going to talk at some point. I think we're doing this coming up next week. With Downloading Chicago Business, we talked to a company, 36 Snap, that does 360 photography for these products. And the reason they do it is because now when you go to Amazon or Walmart or any of the online places, you have evolved as an online shopper. You have evolved, right? Blows my mind to think you can't just go and pick up a, you know, go to a place that you want paper towels. You need to be able to see the 360 photo of those paper towels, or you don't trust it. That's evolving. This company is helping, a Chicago company helping the Amazons and the Walmarts evolve. How are retailers evolving? That's the question. Because you could say that it's all economic trends, and we can say, woe is me, oh, can we change it up? Amazon, all these online shops, everyone has changed. But at the same time, I'm not sure I'm seeing much change coming from the stores that I just mentioned that are going out of business. And maybe it's me, but I do a lot of retail shopping. I'm a good husband in that regard. I'll go in the Pier 1. I'll walk around and kind of, my son Miles, he'll find the big oversized chair to sit in. But me, not so much. I'll walk around, look at every candle. Craig.
Yes, sir.
Do you agree? What do you think of my thesis? That it's not necessarily that retail, that everyone's going to online shopping and that's why they can't keep up, that these retailers are not evolving.
I don't think so. I think, first of all, I don't buy anything online.
Yeah.
Nothing. And I recognize that, and most people don't. If you don't support local businesses, there won't be a tax base to support all the infrastructure.
Right.
And people don't realize it. If you don't have that sales tax that supports local infrastructure, you're going to pay for it in higher property taxes or higher commercial taxes.
That's a good point.
When I need something, I need it. Today, yeah. And that's when I go and get it.
Okay, Craig, but beyond, so it's an altruistic or even personal or selfish reasons for doing this, that you want to make sure that your property taxes don't get higher? Or are you doing it out of habit and the fact that you
didn't? It's a matter of expediency. When I need it, I need it.
Yeah.
And I don't know when I'm going to need it, but I need it today. I need it tomorrow.
Yeah.
I need it tomorrow morning.
Right.
That's when I need it.
There you go. Thanks, Craig. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, Craig, but that's what Amazon does. I think it was a lot of people maybe who don't spend a lot of time online don't recognize how fast these products get to you. Woo! I could go online right now. I should do an experiment. I could go online right now on Amazon and just order paper towels. Just order whatever brand. Put it in my Amazon Prime free delivery. It's probably a good chance that it's on my front doorstep tomorrow morning. If not quicker, if it wasn't overnight. That's how fast they heard you, Craig. But see, that's what I'm saying. Amazon heard you. They are playing to you, Craig. They said, you know what? Craig wants it and when he needs it. He needs it now. So we need to get a product. We need to get a system. We got whatever it takes to get that product to Craig as fast as we can. And that means doubling up, changing their distribution models. Then there's a lot of things they do, and they obviously have prime big money behind them. But when you think about these other big companies got to you know, be the top dog for a long time. The department stores, the retailers I mentioned, Pier 1, Papyrus, Bed Bath & Beyond, they were it. But did they adjust when the online retailers came in? I don't know. Did they adjust when competition was faced or when the consumer changed? That's what I'm thinking more than just people going to online and it ruined their business because people decided to shop elsewhere with technology. 773 says, we all go to stores because we're beyond annoyed with porch pirates stealing our online deliveries. I'm absolutely with you, 773. Sadly, many stores are understaffed. We use buy online and pick up at the store when the service is offered. I'm with you on that, man. Drives me crazy. Can't tell you how many times we've had to deal with that kind of stuff, which is a byproduct. I wonder if that'll change as well. We'll see how the online world changes when they realize that people are just like you, 773, and they don't want to order online because they're afraid the stuff's going to get stolen. Chuck, welcome to the program. How are you, man?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. So what's your thought on this?
My thought is that I'm finding that certain items that specialty stores can't buy in the smaller quantities anymore. They have to buy cases or multiple cases.
Right.
I have parrots, and the parrot food that I used to buy from a small distributor, a small retail store here in town, can't buy it anymore.
She
has to buy
it
in multiple cases, so I end up having to buy it online.
That makes sense. Thanks, Chuck. Thanks for the call. That makes sense. Unfortunately, that's probably how retailers have always thought about the supply chain. If Chuck, you're the only one that buys that parrot food, then they don't need to stock it because you're a specialist and you'll go find it somewhere else. But far too often, I think that that's become the difficult thing where they've decided on so many different products that we all use, that it's just they're not in the wheelhouse. Go find it online. 847, Mary says, I'll miss Bed Bath & Beyond. Hi, Mary. It's convenient to be able to run in there and get a kitchen gadget quickly without paying for shipping or waiting for it. At Bed Bath & Beyond, you could also buy it online, pick it up in the store. And I totally prefer shopping for my own groceries. Maybe it's my obsessive compulsiveness, but I need to pick out the items myself, not have someone else handling them. And I totally love to self-check so I can bag everything myself the way I want it. That's a great text. And I will say this, Mary, this is coming up soon. I'm going to have a societal constitutional convention, and self-checkouts and bagging are high on the list. We need to have some rules on how this all goes down. I got super frustrated the other day where I want to bag my own groceries. I bring my own bag, right? That's the whole idea now. I'm being environmentally conscious. I don't want to pay for the bags, so I bring my own bag. But then there's a tussle with the register. Well, the woman who's working at the register to grab the bag and put it on her side and bag it herself. And I don't understand that because I thought we had the agreement that it was my job to bag. And I want a bag because I don't want to slow down the process. And I also don't want my stuff garbled. And it's interesting, but I don't think there's any rules on any of that. So, Mary, maybe I'll invite you to be part of the Societal Constitutional Convention where we take on things like grocery stores. Or we take on things like tips. Or we take on things like, why does women's haircuts cost double what men's haircuts cost? We'll do all that. I need a clever name for it. The Societal Constitutional Convention doesn't work. But that's where I'm going. And it's based on that text. Thank you, Mary. 312-981-7200. I'm going to take a quick break, just 2 minutes here. Dave, I'm coming to you next. I got a ton of texts as well. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. All right. Let's go to Dave. Dave, you're on the line. I promised you were first. How you doing, bud?
Hey, Justin. You know, one of the reasons why the economy is the way it is because in this day and age, it is so easy and quick to educate yourself and research the product you want to go out and buy.
Amen, right.
You know, in the old days, a sales clerk was, you know, or a salesman had the wisdom and the expertise and the hospitality to spend time with you, you know, talking about what it is you were both looking at and about to buy. You know, mm-hmm. Today, anybody can be a salesman.
Now, here's my question for you on that, Dave, and I guess it's a question of why 1,000 stores have closed in January alone. Are these retailers slow to the pick? Are they slow to pick that up? I mean, did anyone see that coming? Because it's not new. It's been 5-10 years. Did they think it was a fad? Why are so many stores waiting so long to do so, to change and evolve, recognize that the customers might be coming in with much more research instead of just doing the old practice and being in a place where they got to close and close up shop and go bankrupt?
I couldn't answer that in one easy sentence, but I am seeing, you know, wherever I go, signs saying store closing, everything must go, and I it's very sad.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Dave.
Hey, thanks.
All right, 312-981-7200. It is sad. 773 says, I still like the mom-and-pop hardware store. I walk in there with this broken thingamajig, and they know what to do, and they give me a new one. And that's a little bit what Dave's talking about, right? But when I, and this is interesting because when I need a thingamajig for my house, rarely am I thinking of going to a place and having someone help me find it. It's at my fingertips. I can go on Google. I can start looking around, especially with big appliance things like that, bigger things than these. And I've found a way to at least do the dirty work myself. And maybe that's what it is. I don't necessarily go and buy everything online and have it shipped to me, but at least I have a better understanding of what I'm looking for. 312-981-7200. 312 says the day Walgreens and CVS shutter locations, beware. That's true. There's a lot. Well, their pharmacies are probably the most important. I could do without everything else in a Walgreens. I got to be honest with you. There's nothing else in a Walgreens that you can't get in another store except for the pharmacy. And those lines. Open camera already, huh? No line, no way of getting on makeup. That's usually what happens. Every time you turn around in at Walgreens, you're like nine deep. Like, I just came in here to get a candy bar. Nine deep of everybody buying something that's $12 with pennies. And the camera desk not doing anything about it. Finally, out of spite, being like, no line, no waiting, a camera. Oh, man. That's why. That's that experience right there that I just talked about, that I just joked about, is why a lot of these places are going under. You realize the people who don't have those problems, that are able to get at it and have like the self-checkout that Mary was talking about, they're evolving. I think a lot of those stores are going out of business because there's no such thing as customer service and they have a lot of overpriced junk. That's a great point. They needed to evolve. What if they were the ones that could provide things? What if they, like Home Depot? I think Home Depot is a good example. Home Depot's a place, or Meijer, or not Meijer, but Lowe's, where you kind of get a vibe that if you're lost, if you can't get your things answered online, you can go there and someone's going to be able to give you some advice. You can walk up to anyone with the orange apron on and be like, yeah, I got an issue where my toilet's doing this, or my sink is doing this. And they will at least take you to the spot. They may not make the decision for you, but that's a company that has evolved when it's come to customer service. I don't know what people are getting paid, but their workers on the floor have a base level of expertise. And I'm not saying that a Bed Bath & Beyond or Pier 1 doesn't have that, but that's not what they're known for. 773 says, example, if you go to Apt, you get true customer service. That's true. I love Apt. And that's absolutely true. When I went in there last time, it was like they had tape measures out, and we were talking about the size and scope of a washer dryer. Now, most of the places I would hope at that level are doing that, right? Because because what you're buying is expensive. We're not talking about light bulbs at this point. Mary says she's an expert. She'd totally be part of my societal constitutional convention, even though I'm working on the name, because she's a self-described expert on the self-check and grocery shopping in general. Mary, you're in. It's going to be a good one. She said she used to be a Peapod shopper when they shopped for the grocery and the jewels. Wow. That's pretty great. 815 says, I shop at Aldi's. I bag my own, box my own, and I let them do the register. No problem, no fuss, no muss. Okay, 815, I'm with you. But that's not the experience that Mary's having. That's not the experience I'm having. There's no rules. That's why we have to have a constitutional convention. Can't even say it. So, I mean, we need like I needed something cute and quick, rolls off the tongue, because that's what got me mad. I'm like, why are you? And the other part of it was the customers in front of us got a bunch of stuff at the Whole Foods. When we get up there, we have a system up. I'm paying, my wife is bagging, and we're going fast. The customer in front of me, I'm going to stand here because it's not my job to bag my groceries. So the woman working the register is scanning and then putting groceries into the bag, because they don't pay for baggers anymore in these places. So which way is it? We need to come together as a society on this. We need to have big rules and do just like with the real ID rollout, you know, where we get some actor to be like, hi, It is time for the real ID. Here's what you need to know. We need those commercials about, hi. Here's what you need to know about bagging your groceries. Step one, purchase your groceries. Step two, hold your bag. Step three, put items in your bag without the help of the cashier. This has been Edwards James Olmos. Thank you for listening to How to Bag Groceries in 2020. That's just what I thought. I feel like we could do that. So, all right, Mary, you're in. 630 says, this must be regional because I can never find one person to help me in a Home Depot. I've walked around there for half an hour, and I'm so ticked off by the time I leave. Walgreens, on the other hand, I like because I can run in and get out and get my half an app for coffee. Yeah, that you're living in bizarro world. I've never heard that. I'll meet you halfway on the Home Depot stuff, but I've never run in and run out of a Walgreens in my life. And I've been in different cities. It kills me. Like in Chicago, drives me crazy. We go to Seattle, and I'm like, oh, I'll jump in the road. Oh, same thing. Oh, this is universal. This is the culture of this place. Nine deep before they open the makeup counter. It must be in their employee handbook. 773 says, when you're in the Walgreens in line and you're the fourth customer in line, just yell at the top of your lungs, I see three. That must be their culture. That must be the idea. It must be someone who works at Walgreens. When three are in, then camera opens, right? All right. Good to know. Thank you for that. That's a life hack right there. I'm going to do it, and then I'm going to look like a fool because nothing's going to change. I'm going to be like, why'd that guy just yell, I see three, and you'll be snickering at home. All right. Thanks for the conversation here. 9 o'clock hour coming up. Vic Vaughn, Al Jeanne is back, our professor, our resident philosopher. We're going to talk about humility and gratitude and why we need both of these things in our lives and how they go wrong. Professor Al Jeanne coming up next here on 720 WGN, our resident philosopher tonight after Vic's news, 720 WGN. Welcome back to 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, and in studio with me tonight is our resident philosopher, Al Jeanne, the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago. He joins us monthly to talk about the big picture, the big ticket items in our society, and tonight is no different. Professor, great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Happy New Year, and it is a lovely day. There's no global warming. It's going to be 50 in 2 days, but don't worry about it, ladies and gentlemen. These are small issues.
All right, so what are we going to talk about tonight? We've talked in the last couple months, we've talked about all things from the seven deadly sins. We've talked about the best philosopher, the best book.
I've got something really basic right now. To me, two virtues that don't make you a moral person in entirety, but they're absolutely necessary. Let's reflect a little bit. Thank God the holidays are over. I'm a holiday person. I love it, et cetera, et cetera. But thank God it's over. The dishes are clean. Family's going away, et cetera, et cetera. And a new year has begun. But January every year is a special month for me because it is a new year. And because it's my favorite son's birthday. By the way, I only have one son, but so he wins by default. And because it's my birthday, it's the beginning of a new year. And it requires me to reflect on things. And there are two issues I try to reflect on every year. Because it brings me back to basics. And one is gratitude. But I think that gratitude comes out of remembering what humility is. Mm. Now, here's a point, Justin. Humility is not, oh, woe is me, I'm no good. I wasn't good to Jesus because I don't like this, I don't like that. It is not this old theology. It's not medievalism, et cetera, et cetera. It's not even being uncertain and saying, I am nothing, I am not worthy. Rather, it is, who am I? What can I really do? What do I really believe? It's not contempt of self. It's acknowledging both our limits and our strengths. And in a very real way, in some sense, humility is this coming together of what Socrates meant by the unexamined life is not worth living, what Freud meant when he said the hardest thing in life. This is where Freud is absolutely true. Nobody believes in Freud anymore, but he's absolutely true in this. The hardest thing in life is being honest with yourself about about your worst characteristics.
Worst characteristics.
Because that means you have to do something about it. Now we've got an ethical dilemma. I drink too much. I don't, ladies and gentlemen. That was just an example, but I drink too much. Now, what are you going to do about it? So on and so forth.
Well, it's interesting because we're in a world right now where social media is all about showing the best parts.
Right.
Everything that's strong about our personalities. And humility, in some ways, we see this in the political spectrum, almost is a sign of weakness.
Well, there's a sign of weakness or a celebration of their august narcissism. And so that's really a problem. I think it comes closest to Abraham Maslow. Abraham Maslow, which I used to teach all the time in Intro to Philosophy, along with Socrates, was he has these sets of needs, these basic needs and growth needs. We need to have these basic needs, and we need them when they're affirmed in us. Then we need other things, but they have to be honest. They have to be true. They can't be
like
false.
This is like Stuart Smalley type stuff, like good enough and strong enough and like we belong.
A little higher level of analysis.
I like to bring it back down to the masses.
I will give you a footnote on that, but not an A for the class so far. But I think this humility is, sometimes people think of humility as, oh, it means you don't like yourself. Oh, it means you're oversensitive. No. I'm talking about not contempt of self, but awareness of self. What are my talents? What are my abilities? I think one has to know oneself in order to give oneself. I think one has to really recognize what one can do to avoid stupidity, to avoid overextension, but also to give to others what you really are, to not lie about who you are. And I think that healthy humility, if there is such a thing, it really says, it doesn't say, I'm not very humble, or I pride myself, I wish I had more humility. No. Humility really says, I'm not sure of what I am right now. I need to reanalyze myself.
I love this because it almost feels like the social media channels, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, they're built to get rid of humility.
Yeah.
They're almost in this way that everything you just said right there, that I need to be honest with myself. I need to be who I am and not worry about my faults or focus on my faults.
Yeah.
That's the exact opposite of what happens on social media. So is there a concern or is there a movement in society when you think about these companies and the way that they're kind of manipulating us to just kind of get rid of the things that are important to us morally?
Well, I think real humility means loving truth more than self. And I think in this narcissistic age, we love self more than truth.
Mm.
And that we're willing to extend the boundaries of what we consider objectivity because it best suits our needs or suits the needs of the cause we're in. And I think humility is really about being, is about honesty, about really not being preoccupied with self, with letting go and not being the center of the room. Why do most of us hate our three-year-olds or dislike our three-year-olds? Because they have to be the center of the room. My wife says I'm not crazy about my 76-year-old, but that's another story as well. But being the center of the room, that's not, you know, that becomes a little narcissism. I think humility is about self-confidence, self-assuredness, and self-awareness of what you can do. I think the humble person says, and I take this as a strength, I can't do that.
I find it strange in our society because you'll have athletes, and Kobe Bryant comes to mind, and Michael Jordan or whoever, when they're humble. When they get in front of a microphone, they say, well, I try my best, I work hard, and even though they scored 70 points more than everybody else who's on the court, we embrace that. Society says, that's amazing. It's such a humble athlete, he doesn't brag. But there are other circles, and I think of politics, where we don't want that. It's almost, we look at it and we say, that's a sign of weakness, or we feel like that person is not in charge, they're not walking into the room. I think of the president right now, they love this president because at the end of the day, he's coming in and he's getting rid of
humility.
He's
doing something. He is uber or total negativity of humility. He is uber self. There's more of him there than it's just really amazing. Some of the arguments have been going on right now. Let's not get too lost in them. Who are they talking about? I don't even understand what they're talking about. I think real humility is. And let's tie it to personalities. By the way, I think athletes like Michael Jordan and this gentleman who just died, so sad.
Yeah, Kobe.
Kobe's dying, so forth. I've seen them actually see, and Michael say, well, when he had the flu, and they won that game years ago against New York Nets, and he was exhausted.
He taught Jazz, but that's okay. Go ahead.
The
flu game was against the Jazz.
Well, the one he was so exhausted.
It doesn't matter, Al.
We're talking about
Al
Michael.
Al Genie's a resident philosopher. Keep going.
All right. So the Utah Jazz, I'm so sorry.
Who cares?
Sorry.
I know. What do I care?
What do I care about that? The water's draining off and so on and so forth. And he said, I just had to make that shot. I think that he knew what he was doing. I think athletes who play at that upper level, and they're in a zone, to use Phil Jackson's comment, they're out of themselves. And when they come back, they're humbled by it.
Mm.
Because they've just had a transcendental experience. They've just been more of themselves than they've ever been. Now, they have that talent, but they let themselves go. And I want to give an example. I connected that to two plane crashes. About 33 years ago, United Airlines plane flying from Chicago to California suddenly the back engine blew and cut all the wires. So they lost all, the front two engines were fine, the three engine plane. They lost flaps. They lost control of the plane. And they had 200, well, let me get to the right number on this. It just means 296 people on the plane. They had to fly that plane. They pancaked that plane. You're going to remember this. You were much younger then. And they pancaked that plane in Iowa by alternating the jets. And there was a pilot in back who was deadheading to California who had just got out of a crash and came forward. So four pilots, including a navigator at the time, are putting that plane down. They saved 189 lives. They just did what they knew they could do without bravado, without any need for other recognition. Yeah. They knew what they can do. And the quote is amazing. Humility isn't a byproduct of heroism. It's a precondition. Because you have to say, I can do this. If you don't say I could do this, you don't do it. You can't do it.
Professor Al Genie is with me. We're talking about humility. We're also going to talk about gratitude right after the break here. He is the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago and a resident philosopher here on WGN. Okay. Humility is different from humiliation. Those aren't the same concepts. Right. I always thought that they had something to do with each other.
No, they're not. Woe is me. I'm not good. I'm maybe embarrassed by others. Humility is being, again, I want to stress this. It's being honest with oneself about oneself. I love the fact of getting older in this sense, and only this sense, perhaps. I say no to things. I don't care anymore about that. I don't want to do that. No, let's go tobogganing in the snow. No, I'll hurt too much and I have to get, and I don't want to do that anymore. And I think it's knowing self, and that knowing self is more important than anything else, and being honest with the relationship that you're dealing with. And I think humility, as Euripides suggested, is being secure enough to make a decision without being embarrassed by it. And I think that that happens all the time. All of us, did I do the right thing? Did I not do the right thing? When you recognize you can't do it, don't do it.
When
you recognize you can't do it, try. So I think humility is honest appraisal rather than, I am nothing, I am too low. This is not the Buddha mantra. I do not belong, I am not part of, I'm but a cog in the wheel. No, I am a cog. But cogs have the definition too.
Now, the one thing I find hilarious about this, yes, just thinking about humility, is humility gets kind of out of whack when you say, I'm a humble person.
Yeah.
When you actually say to people, I'm humble, man.
That's right.
What can I say? I'm humble.
That's right. I mean, the reality is it's just as ludicrous as saying I'm a virgin, even if you are, right? But to announce it means that you're not in charge of that. I mean, the reality is self-confidence enough to let go. So this gentleman, they're going down in this plane, and just says, by the way, he spent the rest of his life giving talks. He's still alive, that pilot's still alive, never taking a dime for it, because he wants people to know that you could, the things you could do if you let go of self and recognize what you really possess.
Well, I mean, he could take, I don't know, 2,500 would be fine. I just feel bad. He's got to feed his kids, his family.
I would ask for at least a grand, but, that's heavy.
Fascinating. 312-981-7200. Professor Al Genie is with us, our resident philosopher. He's also the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago, also an author. What's the formal title of the comedy book?
The Importance of Being Funny, Why We Need More Jokes in Our Lives.
Yeah, right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. Professor Al Genie here. We first talked about humility. Now let's talk about gratitude. Stay with us. Welcome back to 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman with you. Professor Al Genie is here. He's a resident philosopher. He's a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago. And he joins us monthly here on the program. We missed the holiday season because we were off with all the breaks and stuff. But glad to have you back here in 2020.
Glad to be back.
So we're tonight talking about morality, but mostly about humility and gratitude. We talked about humility.
Yeah. And I think humility without gratitude is kind of coffee without cream or coffee without sugar. It isn't complete, all right? And I think gratitude is appreciation of the given, not taking the given for granted. That's why it's, the month for me is important, because it's a new year beginning. It's my son's birthday, and I was so joyous about having him. And not so much now, but again, at the time, it was seemed to be really important. And my birthday, and, what's new this year? What's going to be part of this year? And so the humility comes up again. But then I realize how lucky I am. How at this point in my life, I have people who love me. I have people I love. I have things I like to do. And I could be without all this. I think gratitude is acceptance and recognizing that your life need not be this way. That that you have more than you possibly deserve, but enjoy it and take care of it and share it with others.
Again, I take us to the news of the week, and you know, with Kobe Bryant and his passing, you see so many people, the takeaway.
Yeah,
you see this all the time on social media, other people talking about hug your loved ones or let people know, or lucky life can turn on a dime, and pay attention to what's in your life. A lot of people accepting this concept of gratitude.
Yeah, I think you really do. And here's Empiricus said, I'll get the name right in the next show. Gratitude is joy in living the life that we are fortunate enough to live.
Where does it go wrong, though, Al? Does it go wrong when we don't recognize the great things that we have? Does it go wrong when we recognize it too much? Where was there a balance that needs to be struck when we're talking about gratitude?
I think that thankfulness, my grandfather lived to 94, and he died at the track making a bet. He won, by the way. The ticket won. 94 is at Maywood Park, which is now gone.
Yeah.
And every day he'd get up after it was about 75. He'd live with me for a couple of years, which was an interesting experience, but that's for another show on aging. And he'd get up in the morning and say, "Qué sorpresa, I'm here. What a surprise, I'm here." He was thankful for every day. And he dressed up. He put a suit on after he had been retired. He was all dressed up. He said, "What do you want me to do today?" I said, "Go to the cleaners." Well, he didn't go to the cleaners in Oak Park, which was right down the block. He went to the train. He got on the train, went to his cleaners back at Taylor Street because he didn't trust the guy was using. He was gone all day and came back for dinner. It was wonderful. He was thankful to be alive. He kissed me every day. He said, "I only miss your grandmother." And then he had the one question he always had about life. He says, "I've had a good life. My children, are okay." But his first wife died. And he said to me once in a moment, he says, "I only worried about one thing." I said, "What, Grandpa?" He says, "In heaven, will I be with your grandmother, or do I got to go back to my first wife?" But he was thankful.
The questions that plague us. Yeah, right?
But he was thankful about life. He could have had a lot of other things. He didn't die in World War I. When everyone around him died, let's not go into that right now, but go see 1917 and remember history. He got to this country. He got a job. He never took a bad dime anywhere along the line. His daughter finished high school. You know, that was an amazing accomplishment. And I think that gratitude is recognizing that it doesn't have to go this way. Nothing is guaranteed. Nothing is guaranteed. Last night I watched a documentary on NFL. On the great catch, Joe Montana to Dwight Clark, and he died of Lou Gehrig's disease. And he's in his chair, an incredibly handsome man, in his chair, and says, I can't be bitter. I wish I didn't have this. I can't be bitter. I've had a life I never expected. I had these wonderful moments. I got to play with my team. My wife loves me. I love my children. I wish it were other, but I can't be bitter about this. No one gets out of this anyway whatsoever. I just got a bad deal. And I think that that's what gratitude is. I'm grateful the fact that I lost my leg. No, I'm grateful the fact that I'm alive, that there are options here, that things are moving. And I think gratitude comes out of recognition of whatever this is in life, it's not really mine. You can't say this is mine. You know, I tell my students all the time, there was a recent example that happened. These two students were in the class back after back, so they stayed up in the back row. And he was at one end, she was at the other end, and they never talked to each other. They're on the cell phones. So I finally went up to him last year, and I said, "If you notice that woman over there, she's really very pretty. Maybe we should talk to her." And they started to talk. They're dating. They're very seriously dating now. They never noticed each other. Think of all the things that happen in our life. They're just accidents.
So a little bit of gratitude is about looking around you.
It's about looking around. Yeah. Be thankful. Think how good of a day it is.
Is it possible, though, Al, talking with Professor Al Genie, or a resident philosopher, we do this every month, talking about humility and gratitude. Is it possible to be grateful and thankful for the life you live without having to reiterate it all the time?
Right. In fact, to do so too much is to be braggadocio. This is about self. These are the virtues that are kept best inside. You don't come up to your wife and say, "You know, I didn't lie today at all. No civil rights claims were made against me.
Right.
I didn't slap anyone at all. Might I have an extra kiss this evening, darling?" No, these are the things. I think this is genuinely, I must admit, I've thought about this. You know, my kids got through college. They don't own a dime, and I helped them buy a house. I'm fulfilled.
You're fulfilled.
And I'm so grateful for that. Now, they're both complaining they'd like the house a little bigger, and they wish they had gone to Harvard, but, you know, they're just rotten kids. What can I tell you? But you don't go around telling people that all the time. By the way, I'm a great dad. By the way, I'm this, I'm that. It's knowing that look at the tragedies that are happening around us every day. Besides Kobe Bryant, and I'm really sorry for that. It's just a glaring, glaring, awful thing. But look at the things happening every day. Puerto Rico, went through a hurricane and then earthquakes. They still haven't fixed their water or the electricity from the last 5 years. And think of that. I went back to Italy when I was a young man in 1963 at the Loyola's Rome Center. I was one of the first students to go there. And I found the brother of my uncle. He wasn't really uncle, but Italians call everyone uncle that you're related to by blood and older. And he said, Joe is pretty good in America. He was saying it all in Italian. It's a pretty good here, except when the Tedeschi qui, except when the Nazis were here.
Yeah, right.
He said, but it's been a good life.
Oh.
And how many of us could say that? You know, and I think that we have to recognize, even if you're not wealthy, even if you don't have the things you want, you're alive. You have options. You have possibilities. Be thankful.
There's the one way of being braggadocious, but there's the other of it ringing hollow. And what I mean by that is people saying, I'm great, or I'm thankful for every day, or best day of my life, things of that nature, where they almost become small talk. It almost becomes a way to deflect any sort of deep interaction with people. What do we do about that? Maybe we're lying to ourselves, and going back to humility, we're lying to ourselves that we're not grateful.
To be serious about this, you can have an exciting moment, say, it's Christmas time, bona pranz, everybody happy, and I'm so grateful for my life. Yes, but to brag about that, I think means you're unsure about that. I think this is what friends say to each other in a quiet heart-to-heart. This is not something that you make public. Hi, I'm Al Genie, and I'm happy today, on my podcast in the morning. But I think this is a private matter. I think, like, love is a private matter. You don't walk around.
You have to get in touch with gratitude.
You have to get in touch. I don't think you walk around and tell everybody, I love my wife. I liked her a little bit more last week, but that was before. But I really love my wife. And, when she doesn't yell at me, I really love her even more. You don't say things like that. Right. That's a private moment. We've all turned to a friend and say, I'm not really happy right now. I'm really kind of. But you can't tell that to everybody. I think that these are the virtues that sustain our soul. And gratitude. Remember when Sully put that plane down? He ran out there and he started counting everybody on the wing, and he kept going up and down. That plane floated perfectly, by the way. That plane, everything went right on that. Boy, everything went right on that.
My last thought just is that as we talk about these two things, humility and gratitude, is that to be gratitude is to be humble.
Yeah.
Right? They go hand in hand.
Yeah, they do go hand in hand.
Everything you're just saying about when you're gratitude and you're not humble, it doesn't make any sense.
It negates each other. But, I think that there are so many basic things. We're not talking about gratitude for jobs, but that I have a friend, that somebody loves me, that I'm not considered a pariah in society. These are the things, and it can go so wrong. I'm reading Scott Turow's new book. It's out next month. I happen to get an advanced copy. And now Sandy Stearns, it's called The Last Trial, and Sandy Stearns is 85. But he said, he's saying to himself, I may lose this case, but I've had a good life. And I didn't. And he beat having a bad death. He had a cancer that got cured. I could have had a terrible death. I've had a good life. I can take everything else that's coming.
Professor Al Genie, he's a resident philosopher here tonight talking about humility and talking about gratitude. The professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago, who joins us monthly here on the program. Al, great to see you. Thanks for being here.
Great to see you.
312-981-7200, phone number. Thanks to Al Genie for coming in tonight. Talk about humility. Talk about gratitude. What are you thankful for? I feel like that's a Thanksgiving question. Maybe the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. And tonight, we ask you here on 720 WGN, what are you thankful for? But maybe it's more about what are you thankful for? Who do you want to say thank you to? Like, for instance, today, I'm grateful and I say thank you that my son is with me. My son, Miles, is here in studio tonight.
Hello.
Hello. Today was a day off of school, so we get to hang out today. And also tonight he is here because, as we said, my wife is out in a birthday party out on the West Coast. So I'm thankful, and I thank him grateful that you got straight A's and you are in my life. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay, Miles.
You're so welcome.
You can go back to playing Pokemon. So.
Okay, thanks.
There you go. But there you go. 312-98...
Ice gym, everybody. I'm on the ice gym. If you feel me, comment down in the comments below. Hit the subscribe button. Keeping it in IRL.
All right.
Yo, bros. I'm out. Subscribe.
All right. Mic is off. Thank you, though. 312-981-7200. But I'm grateful that I could understand a little bit of that. What are you grateful for? Who do you want to say thank you to? If you think about what Al was saying about, you get a chance to think about your life and who's in it. And, you know, you get a chance to say things to loved ones or people that you are grateful for. You can do it on the radio. 312-981-7200. Al's coming back next week. We were talking about this story. He has a bunch of ethical twisters. You know, kind of we see these a lot. Not unlike what TJ and Rush brought in last week. They did the hypotheticals, which were great. They're coming back, by the way. Have I told you that? I talked to Rush and TJ, and they are in for a monthly segment. They come in with a bunch of hypotheticals, new stuff, and we're going to figure out a timing and a schedule for all that. But they were so fun last week, putting hypotheticals out for you to listen to and to comment on. It was a lot of fun. But, yeah, Al's got a bunch of ethical dilemmas that he teaches his students, and, you know, not that different than the show that used to be on Channel 7. I think it was the, what would you do? You know, like, if you saw a baby, you know, someone smoking while they were pregnant, what would you do? Undercover video. Not that, but something like that. And it reminded me of what we saw today on Twitter. It's going around as the red pill, blue pill meme. There's variations of that meme all the time, right? That's the old Matrix. Which would you take, the red pill or the blue pill? But this is the one that's going around now, which is great. You ready for this one? Let's talk about this one. Take the red pill. So you have a choice of taking the red pill or the blue pill. Would you take a red pill that would restart your life at 6 years of age? With all the knowledge you have now. Okay? Red pill. Restart your life at 6 years of age with all the knowledge you have right now. So if you lived your full life, you're listening right now, maybe you're 70, 75 years old, you're like, I could start over with everything I've accumulated. Oh my gosh, I would do that in a heartbeat, right? Or you take the blue pill and you get $10 million in cash. $10 million in cash. Red pill, restart your life at age 6 with all the knowledge you have now. Blue pill, $10 million in cash. What would you do? There's a question I have, an ethical question here. And I guess the question is like $10 million in cash right now. If you were, let's say I'm 45, I'd probably take the $10 million, right? But if I restarted my life at 6, you get a little bit of a fountain of youth situation. And you get to keep the knowledge that you have. And life is more important than money. So, you know, I don't know. I probably would pick the red pill. I'd probably restart my life at 6 years of age with all the knowledge that I have now. Just feel like it's more time. It's youth. An opportunity to be smarter. And because of those smarts and because of that wisdom and knowledge, that would probably bring you rake way more than $10 million in cash. That's what I would think. So what's you like? 312-981-7200. Tell me now on text or call. Would you take the red pill or would you take the blue pill? Scott. What are you grateful
for? How you doing, sir?
What are you grateful for? And turn down your radio.
This is going to sound kind of crazy, but it's the truth. Mm-hmm. I've lost both my parents and my wife in the last couple of years. But in all this tragedy, I have found my God and I have found peace and I have found that, you know, they were all very ill, and they're in a better place. And I'm at peace, and, you know, I am grateful for little things, like getting up and watching the birds and looking at animals and looking at the sky and looking at the stars at night. Mm. And just knowing that there is a purpose behind everything in life.
Yeah. Well, first off, sorry for your loss. And second off, that's very profound, and it takes sometimes it takes immeasurable loss to be able to find that gratitude. So, thanks for calling.
It's just amazing, you know. I mean, you know, it's just amazing how much God does really love us, and that's all I have to say.
All right, thanks, Scott. Thanks for calling. That's wonderful. I mean, really grabs the whole heart of what Al was talking about. And Scott, thanks for calling up and sharing that with us. What you're grateful for. 312-981-7200, 847, Mary, she says, yeah, red pill, 100%, right? Go back and start with what the knowledge that you have now, you would go back restart your life at 6 years old, or you take the blue pill and you get $10 million in cash. 847 says, yeah, I'd restart at six with all the knowledge I have now, and I'd likely be a millionaire anyway by the age of 20. And that's part of it, right? That's what you're hedging your bets on yourself. 870 says, if I went back with the current knowledge I have now, $10 million would be worth nothing. Easy. Everyone's going with the red pill. You know what? That's because you're a WGN listener. Smart. You know. Life is more important than money. If this was, say, a CNBC crowd, right? Listen to Fox Business all night, you'd be like, give me that cash. But in this situation, you're not. Again, for those joining us, this is a meme that's going around today. It's great. Red pill or blue pill meme. These are kind of famous, where from the Matrix, you could take the red pill, you go back to your life, take the blue pill, you go down the rabbit hole, or whichever, which color it is. In this case scenario, this ethical dilemma, would you take the red pill, which would restart your life at 6 years of age with all the knowledge you have now, or would you take the blue pill, which would give you $10 million in cash? Red pill, restart your life at 6 years of age, all the knowledge you have now. Blue pill, 10 mil. 312-981-7200. Which one would it be? I've already had, I feel like right now everybody's picking the red pill. Maybe that's the trick. Maybe if I said 10 million cash and taken a heartbeat, everyone would be following my footsteps. But right now, everybody's going with the red pill, which is good. 708 says, blue pill. I'm where I'm supposed to be at this point in my life. That's very profound. So you know where you're at in your life. You don't want to go backwards. You don't need to have extra wisdom or extra years. You'll take the cash. No, I like that. There's some confidence to that. And maybe it's selfish to think that you can go back anyway. Maybe it's selfish to think that you can be 45, 50 years old like me and go backwards, you know? And think that that's going to make for a better life. Not sure that's how it works. 312 makes a great point. I've got great friends and family in this old body of mine. I'm taking the $10 million, keeping those people in my life. It's a great way to look at it. You're right. You don't think about what you're going to lose if you went to 6 years old. You'd have all the wisdom, sure. It reminds me of the movie What We Do in the Shadows, which is the vampire movie that Taika Waititi did, which is one of my favorite. It was so hilarious. But the idea being that these vampires are hundreds of years old, and one of the vampires is in love with one of the women that, and he was just so shy to talk to her. And he finally goes to talk to her, but in vampire time, it's been 100 years. So she's like, she was 18 when they met, and now she's 90. He forgot about time and how that works. Melanie says, put me down for the red silk. What a great week of broadcasting. Thank you. Told a friend about you just yesterday. I'll take that. Thanks, Melanie. Right? But you would do the red pill. You'd go back to 6 years old. How about 815? Blue pill. If you were six and you knew what you knew now, it would make no difference. You've had no control over your life. Besides, who'd want to go through school again? That's wonderful. 815, that's great. 319, blue pill, your knowledge today isn't making you millions, so what do you think it's going to do years from now? That's great. You get such great test scores, though. Think about the standardized test. You still fail the standardized test. Jim, which one are you going to take? You take the red pill or the blue pill, Jim?
The blue pill.
Yeah? Why the 10 million?
I'm just 5 years old.
Okay.
I think age has to do with it. I mean, you only got so much time left. You know that.
Right. So why not take the go back in the red pill and be 6 years old?
Because you got a long road ahead on that. You don't know what can. You get hit by a bus the next day, and what is all the knowledge in the world going to do for you? I guess you could do that with the $10 million, too, but.
Yeah, true.
I would rather take that because things are just way out of hand with prices and costs these days.
So you're,
and I know how to invest it, too.
So you're frugal. I like that. Thanks, Jim. Thrifty in your choice. All right. 708 says red pill, no doubt. 630 says red before family, blue after. Oh, interesting. So different times in your life. 630 says depends what would happen to my kids. That's a great point. I would assume just based on the logic of the meme and the ethical twister, tongue twister, not tongue, mental, what do you call it, brain teaser, that your kids would not come with you. You would restart your life at 6 years of age. They would still live on, but you would be six. So I don't know. I don't know if they would know who you were. And even if they did, I don't know the relationship would be the same. Right? This is where we extrapolate. 773 says, what about the wonder and innocence of childhood that would make you, that you would lose with the acquired knowledge if you went back now? You're absolutely right. That's a great, great point, 773. You wouldn't be a kid. You'd be an adult in a kid's body. And so the fun part of being a kid would be lost on you. Miles, what would you do? Would you take the red pill or the blue pill?
Well, in my opinion, it would be pretty tough because I'm not an adult yet. So it'd just be like going back like
6 years.
6 years.
Yeah.
But.
So you'd take the $10
million. Well, yeah, but like that's not the only reason. Because like if you retained all the knowledge that you still had, but you were a six-year-old, nobody would really listen to you. Because, like, I saw this one clip of Family Guy, and it was the Thanksgiving special, and Stewie Griffin, there was, like, a joke where Stewie Griffin saw a Stewie Griffin balloon, and then Lois, and then he was like, Mommy, 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 look, it's me, it's me. And then Lois was like, oh, yeah, that's right. It's a baby. Look, Peeta, he sees that he's a baby, and the balloon is a baby.
Right.
Like, they're the same.
They're not
baby.
Listening to the baby. They're not listening
exactly.
to this dude.
They're
right.
not going to listen right. to what opinions you have. So
because you're 6 years
useless.
Old. So knowledge is useless. Good call, Miles.
I mean, it's still useful. Like, you won't get dead.
Yeah but
you
still.
You won't die so quickly.
Right. 10Mil727 says, the world today is not what it was when I grew up in it, so why go back? 847 says, the red pill for sure. I'd be a millionaire by the time I was 8, a billionaire by 15, and completely unstoppable by 21. The blue pill, retired firefighter from the suburbs and sadly divorced 3 times. Take the $10 million and donate my current church and all those family and friends I hurt in my life. That's a profound statement. And kind of playing off of humility and gratitude, that kind of plays to what Al was talking about. For you to recognize that. Be able to make a choice to take the money. That's very interesting. 630, I'd take the $10 million. My kids mean too much to me to lose them. That's great. 312, the blue pill. Who wants to live another 70 years in a world like this? I'd use the money to make the world a better place. It's only $10 million. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Taxes taken out. You know they're going to take 60% of that. Everybody in your family's one I'm going to cut. You're going to be walking away with about $70,000. Let's... 815, are these pills going to cost me anything before I take it? I'm going with the red, so I can sell these pills when I'm 21 for millions. That's good. You're always the entrepreneur. If I go back in time, this is 630, and retain the knowledge, yes, I would take the red pill, but if I can't go back in time and give a bunch of money to Steve Jobs and make billions of dollars, then give me the blue pill. I see. So if you're saying if you can go and change history or do something that you won't be able to because you'll be 6 years old. You're not going back in time, right? You're just going back to 6 years old as yourself. So you would not know where you'd be investing that money. 708 says, I'm 65. I'm not sure I want to go through all that BS again if given another chance at the age of 6. That's a good point. These are great, you guys. Thanks so much for calling in. Very thoughtful or texting in as well. Thanks. Very thoughtful. And I appreciate people calling in and talking about their situations and sharing their situations with the rest of us. It's a good hour. 312-981-7200. Would you take the red pill or the blue pill? It's 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Yeah, it has been a whole week. It's surprising. We the Blackhawks on their NHL All-Star week, and so I've been on every night, which is usually not the case because there'll be a Blackhawks game here and there. Like next week, they're back. I think there's a couple of games, Tuesday and Wednesday. But it's great to get some momentum going and talking with you guys. 312-981-7200. Feel like to get to know you again, which is awesome. 847 says the blue pill. What we're talking about here, and we're going to move on in just a second, but we're talking about the meme that's out today that everybody's talking about, which is a red pill, blue pill meme. These are famous, but it's a scene from The Matrix, take a chance or pick a lane. Red pill would be restart your life at 6 years of age with all the knowledge you have now versus the blue pill, $10 million in cash. Red pill, restart your life at six, everything you know now. Blue pill, $10 million cash. I think it's been pretty thoughtful in people extrapolating from that and getting a better understanding of what that means. 847 says the blue pill. Take the money. I've made so many missteps, but if I didn't make those mistakes in my life, I wouldn't have met some of the most valued people. Sticking with the blue pill. I like that. Blue pill, let's see, there's one more here. Depends, this is my favorite, 847. Depends on the parents I would have. That's a great point. Do you get to interview them now? Meaning, you know, at 45, I get to interview them and say, okay, I'll do it. I'm going to be with these people. That's great. And then when you're six and you have that knowledge, you can reason with them. You can co-parent yourself. Maybe you don't need parents if you have all that wisdom. I mean, geez, you know how to make some macaroni and cheese. Put some chicken fingers in the oven. I think it'd be okay. How to dress yourself. Get yourself to... That's the thing that would be the best, is that when you go to school, we're all thinking about, oh, you might get ahead in grades, but you would know how to navigate the streets, know how to catch the bus. All the things that you would have to teach. I mean, tie and shoes. I think it's great. You'd know how to negotiate when you have to cross the street. 312-981-7200. All right. Coming up, let's talk about the Super Bowl. I don't really want to talk about the X's and O's of the Super Bowl. But the Super Bowl, Pete and I were talking about this today. Super Bowl is a big trade show for football. I mean, this is the kind of thing. It's obviously massive, massive event. One of the biggest in sports. But if you're going to say that the Oscars are for films and the Emmys are for TV and the Grammys are for music, you'd say the Super Bowl might just be for sports. Beyond what's on the field, it has all to do with everything that has to do with sports, and mostly the NFL. And I've heard over the last couple of years, many, many people making the choice to get off the drug that is football. Whether it be what happens with CTE, what some of the domestic abuse stuff that happens with the players, the amount of greed that is on display, both from the ownership and the coaches and people on the field, to the ticket prices and the costs of being a fan, to the social issues of the league, whether you're for it or against it, kneeling during the national anthem. Where are you at with football? Are you going to watch this game? Did you skip this season? I want to get a gut check because I remember that being a big deal about 2 or 3 years ago where people were saying, you know, I'm walking away from the game. I don't care anymore. And then I feel like that just kind of went away. And now everyone's talking about how unbelievable this Super Bowl is going to be. And all the Super Bowls. And Super Bowl Mahomes, Super Bowl. So if you're one of those people who walked away from the sport and you don't want to watch it and you have stayed, you know, you stuck to your guns, let us know coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. The other two, I want to get on my soapbox about the dumb stories that we see constantly about how many people are going to call in sick on Monday. And they do this with March Madness, too. Oh, you know how much productivity people are losing because of people watching basketball games at work? I find these to be fake numbers. We'll break them down for you. I think that once you start to peel the layer back, you start to recognize that it's kind of hogwash. It's just a dumb headline for all of us to consume and then pass on at a Super Bowl party. Oh, there's going to be 17 million people not going to work tomorrow. Let's debunk that number, shall we? We'll do that coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. 630 says red pill. I've lost too many people in my life to suicide. I would prevent a great deal of hurt to a lot of people if I went back to the age of 6. Well. Yeah. And then funny, Miles 773 says, it's funny because Stewie comes to mind, a baby with an adult mind. That's what you would be. You'd just be a Stewie. Right, that was sort of the same idea you were talking about.
Yeah, and something else that I wanted to point out. If you had the same amount of knowledge, and let's talk. If you had the same amount of knowledge, wouldn't you have the same brain size? Because babies and adults don't have the same brain size.
Oh, yeah, so you'd have a big head like Stewie. You'd
be a big brain.
So you have that kind of football-shaped head.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think that the...
That's more cartoonish, but like yeah. It would be like a genetic defect, so... You would probably die in the first...
Well, let's pretend that, since it is just a hypothetical, that we don't have to worry about...
Not yet.
...the actual transfer of brain size.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
847 says, I'm skipping the Super Bowl. We'll start right there. Wow. Any organization that coddles dog-fighting criminals, domestic abusers, and unpatriotic kneelers does not get my viewership. Plenty of other channels to watch. That's what we'll talk about coming up here in the 10 o'clock hour. That, and if we have time, I don't know if we do. I've been kind of railing about this all week, but I know people don't necessarily care about basketball, but boy, oh boy, I cannot believe that the NBA All-Star Game is coming to Chicago next week, in Chicago at the United Center, hosting the basketball world's biggest event. It's going to be the big celebration of Kobe Bryant, everything in between. And they did not have the wherewithal to put a Chicago Bull on the All-Star team. Now, you could say, oh, he doesn't deserve it, Zach LaVine. He does. I think he has 7 or 8 games in a row now. He's over 20 points. And it's not really about that. It's about clout. What happened to Reinsdorf's clout that he could get a guy on the All-Star game in his own building? That's just, it's unfathomable. The Bulls have lost all clout. I'm flabbergasted that there's not an All-Star from Chicago in an All-Star game that's in Chicago. We'll talk about that. Vic Vaughn's news is now, 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the phone number of Justin Kaufman. I'm with you till 11 o'clock. Dave Plyer coming up at 11 o'clock, as he does here on Fridays. Okay, so let's get into the Super Bowl talk. I also want to talk about this. Chicago Public Schools suspends the Lincoln Park boys basketball season. Lincoln Park basketball was on a roll. High school basketball here in Chicago, Lincoln Park, obviously a big neighborhood right on the lake. There was tonight, there's some misconduct allegations involving the team, and the Chicago Public Schools has suspended they're number 10 in the state. They suspended the Lincoln Park basketball team and the season. They said it's over. And it involves a team, the principal and the assistant principal have been removed. The coach already had been removed in January, a little bit earlier. The two assistants to the coach have been removed. And this all stems from an overnight trip, a tournament, a holiday winter tournament in Detroit. Michael O'Brien, who's the great preps basketball writer for the Sun-Times, has the story. You can check it out there. But it seems to have to do with misconduct allegations. Allegedly, this is what Michael O'Brien and Nadir Issar are writing about, one of the players having sex on that trip, and a cover-up ensued. That's the seems to be what this is about. Social media is involved as well. So we'll kind of pay attention to that. That's breaking today, tonight. So that's another story, along with the story we talked about earlier, that the state police are investigating sexual misconduct allegations against ex-state representative and now McHenry County Board Chair Jack Franks. An investigation that was underway and was deemed credible by the speaker's office a year ago. I'm not sure where it went after that, because the speaker said they did the investigation into what seemed to be sexual misconduct and stalking against the former state rep, Jack Franks. He denies any wrongdoing, but they said it was credible. They set up this, the Madigan camp set up, rules. Jack Franks couldn't come into the office. Jack Franks couldn't be in the building without supervision, all that kind of stuff. But I'm not sure they ever got the police involved. because the Illinois State Police are the ones who raided. It was a raid. I mean, it was executing a search warrant today. The Capitol offices, or this was earlier in the week on Wednesday, just finding out about it today. So there's a little bit of a disconnect. I think that's what people are going to take away from the story is why did the Speaker's office know about this, seem that the allegations were credible, and do nothing about it? And nothing might be questionable, but it'll be interesting to see how this story plays out. So this is a classic Friday night dump, guys. Two big stories tonight. Story about Jack Franks, but also the story about the Lincoln Park boys basketball season. Removing the principal, suspending the team, suspending the season. They were number 10 in the state. Lincoln Park basketball having a great season, but they no longer are going to be competitive this season. They're being suspended for misconduct allegations on a trip tournament to Detroit over winter break. Two big stories that we'll know much more about come up on Monday. Back to our segment. Before we get to the Super Bowl stuff, I just wanted to look back at the text line because I had asked people what they were thankful for. I'd asked people about the red pill and the blue pill, and got some great answers during Vic's news. 630 says, the red pill, I would go back and invent Amazon so I'd get more than 10 mil. Yeah, it doesn't work that way, though. I don't think you go back. I think you go into your head at 6 now. Not sure. Okay, so 219 says, Justin, this is from Linda. I know this segment is over, but I wanted to share with you that I'm incredibly grateful and humbled to be married to my best friend for almost 50 years. He's born in California. I was born in New York. We met in Indiana. We're still here. He's very ill right now. Just left the hospital. Praying he makes it to our 50th on August 22nd. We're praying too, Linda. Thanks for writing in what you're thankful for and grateful for. All right, 312-981-7200. Super Bowl! You going to watch this game? I'm not sure I'm going to watch it. I mean, it's nice. But at the same time, I'm not sure. You know, once you lose a little bit of the allegiance of your loyal team, it becomes a little bit more tough. Now, obviously, I probably will. What else is going to be on opposite of it? But, you know, at a certain point, there was a thought in my head about giving up football based on all the different things, and it was mentioned as well in one of the texts here. But I'm not sure. I wonder if, you know, as you consider the Super Bowl to be the trade show for sports, for football, it has to be gut check time. That's why Roger Goodell does his big speech during the Super Bowl. And the question just becomes, if it's gut check time and we're talking about the state of football, are you, as a football fan, do you feel like it's gotten better over the last couple of years since they've kind of moved on from the Colin Kaepernick issues and the issues of CTE and they've addressed it with better equipment and better rules? Or are you getting more ticked off with the NFL and you're ready to give up football forever if you haven't already? 312-981-7200. The other story, which I really want to get to, is about you see this story all over. I saw this headline 16 different ways, 17 million different ways today. 17 million people expected to be sick on Monday. This because the Super Bowl on Sunday, we talked about it earlier this week. Why don't they just move it to Saturday? So the goal, the idea being that 17 million people are going to call in because of they had too much fun the night before. Now here's how it breaks down. We're looking at these stats. Of that 17 million, the story says 11 million are going to take personal days. Okay, so that's not really calling in. They've already, they to say that they called off sick or whatever, or called into work, they get those days, right? You get vacation days or personal days, so it still counts. 4.7 million are reported to take sick days. And this is the stat that gets me. 1.5 million people just aren't going to show up. This article says that 1.5 million people on Monday are just not going to call. They're not going to talk to their boss. They're just not going to show up. Who does that? Is that a thing? This is where I think someone's going, you know what, we got to round this number up. So say 1.5 million just don't show up. And do you get fired on the day? So the article should be 1.5 million people get fired on Tuesday? Can you imagine a job in any case where if someone just doesn't show up? I mean, I'll understand, like, call, oh, man, you're not going to believe this, I'm so sick. Or an email, oh, I'm so sick. Or in advance, going through the system and making sure you have the day off. But say 1.5 million people aren't going to show up. They're just not going to make a call. Nothing. Total disrespect for the job they have that they get paid for. I find that hard to believe. Or maybe not. 312-981-7200. I don't know. 608 says, with the high prices we pay for Bears tickets, fans should get refunds when the Bears don't make the playoffs. I'm 100% with you on that. That's another thing we're going to figure out in our societal constitutional convention. How to deal with losing sports teams. And then 708 says, lost productivity from the Super Bowl. Overhyped. People will talk about it. Whatever they can do to avoid working. Lost dogs, suspended keg, where to go to lunch, whatever. You're right, 708. Also, I thought about that. I'm like, I keep saying call in sick. That's me. Like showing like my generation that you used to have to call in sick. Because the part, there's another part of this that has to do with calling in sick. And again, I'm saying it. But 1 in 4 people have been caught by their bosses calling in sick because of investigations. Their boss caught him on social media, caught him other places. Almost like the Ferris Bueller, where the principal's looking for Ferris Bueller, that kind of thing. And then this, get this stat. 87% of coworkers do not believe that you're sick when you call in. They just don't believe it. That's where we're at now in society, where you call in, or most of the time now you just, I don't feel so good. Thanks, I'm taking a day off. We don't believe you. 87% don't believe that you're sick. Greg, what's your take on that? Do you believe your coworkers, when they call in sick, that they're sick?
Well, I got to tell you that the cat's out of the bag for this year, but for next year, the best day to go in and fill out an application for a job would be the Friday before Super Bowl Sunday. So when everybody gets canned, you're the first guy to get called.
You're right. This is a great idea. Yeah, if you're looking for work, yeah.
I think positive.
I love it. Thanks, Greg. Thanks for that. That's awesome. That's so good. All right, here's what I want to do. Yeah, I get a, it would be a fun bit. Since a new generation, they don't have to call in sick. You can pretty much tweet that you're not coming in these days. But it's all through email or text, things like that. You don't even have to fake it. The art of faking calling in sick is lost. We were good at that. When I worked at Omni, oh, I was so good at it. I'd be on the phone and be like, hey, yeah, it's Justin. You're not going to believe this. I don't know. I'm so excited to come in today and stock the shelves. I know it's shelf stock day. But I think I got an appendicitis. And it's bleeding. It's so much blood, but I'm just going to see what happens. So yeah, I'll be there tomorrow. All right. Bye. Like Ferris Bueller, right? You see that? That was so convincing. That was like Brad Pitt in Once a Time in Hollywood. All right, here's what we're going to do. 312-981-7200. Call in with your best fake sick. Let's teach the kids how it's done. 312-981-7200. I'll take a break here. Call in. I want to get your best sick. You call in, I'll be your boss. I'll just answer the phone and be like, hey, Greg, you coming in an hour? And you just give it to me. Give me your best sick voice. Let's show the youngsters that an email is not sufficient. If you had a good fake sick call, it'd be less than 87%. They'd all love you. They'd all be like, oh, I feel so bad. Pete Zimmerman, he sounds terrible. He's not faking it. 312-981-7200. Get on the line now. We'll do some fake sick calls. 720 WGN. Talking about the overhyped stat that people call in sick after the Super Bowl. And it's interesting that they, as 312 says, sure, they're sick of doing what kind of job they ever are doing. That's so true. The trick is calling in sick and doing it 2 days in a row. Seems more legit that way. Yeah, that's good. I could request Monday off, but after tonight and tomorrow, liver needs a break. 312, that's smart. All right, so I want you to call in 312-981-7200 because a lot of the kids that are listening right now, They don't call in sick. They text in. They email. I've been in management in the last couple of years, and it's like, hey, all you get is the email. You're not going, oh, I'm not feeling so well. Nothing to do about it. You can't check it. You can't. At least we used to fake it, right? At least we put some art into it. So get on the line right now. Give me your best sick voice. Give me your best call in sick. I'll be your boss tonight. Okay, so I'm working at the Omni. I'll be the boss. Okay, mopping the floors, sitting in the shelves. Oh, I better pick up this phone. I think it's Steve. Hey, Steve, how's it going? You coming in for the shift?
I don't know. It just started all of a sudden. My stomach hurts. And
oh, no.
I don't know if I'll be able to make it in today.
Oh, no. You take some Pepto-Bismol?
No, I'm allergic to that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I'm okay if you come in, you know, because, you know, you could use the toilet here if you want to use the toilet.
I got the chills. I think it's better if I stay home today in bed.
All right. Well, I'll find somebody else. All right. Feel better.
All right.
Yeah. There you go.
Thank
you. This is a great bit. 312-981-7200. Call in sick. If this the art of calling in sick. We're talking about how in the Super Bowl, they say on Mondays, everybody calls in sick. And I'm like, they don't call in sick anymore. They text in sick. They email sick. We've lost the fine art of calling in sick. Even my son Miles is here. I don't think you've ever had to call in sick, have you?
No. Well, mostly because I'm only sick like once a year.
Okay, so let's say that you had to call into school. So I'm going to pretend I'm the principal, ready? So I'm going to be like, this is the principal.
Hi.
Speak up. Who's this?
It's Miles. I can't come to school today. Oh, I just have like something in my throat and
oh. Well, drink some water. All right. See, you need work, Miles. All right. You need work. Jack's going to do it here. Jack will show you how it's done. You just don't know because you're young and you just used to email. Okay. All right. Here we go. Ready? Colin, is this Jack?
Yeah, it's Jack. Jack, I don't think I'm going to make it in today.
Oh, Jack, you really need you today. There's no way you can take some
My head's pounding. I'm congested. I can't even look at the screen without my head just... I can't make it in. I got diarrhea in the head.
The cough and the diarrhea. All right. Thanks, Jack. I love it, man. What a fun bit. You got to work on it. Everyone's saying you got to work on your Miles. You got to work on your sick voice.
No, because it's for two reasons. They're mostly email sick. I'm mostly like, oh.
Well, you have your parents.
I just email sick, and then I look at mom, and she's like, "Is this good?" And she's like, "Yeah."
Okay, let's try it again. I'll try it again. Ready?
I
want you to call in sick again. Ready?
Okay.
This is the principal.
it's oh God.
Not good enough.
God, it's terrible.
312-981-7200. Too funny. It's so fun. This is Miles, you got to work on it. 630. I have all young bosses. It's agreed upon that Monday is a wash. That's smart. See, that's how life is. That's how life should be. 847. The young people now use the phrase calling off rather than calling in. Wondering when that changed. That's a good point. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Pat. Pat, you're not calling sick, but you have a story about calling sick.
An incident. Okay. And I live in McHenry, Justin.
Hey, great.
By 120 in Ringwood Road.
Yeah, right on.
And I was on my way to Spring Grove to Intermatic, and... I had an old Maverick car that had the one seat in front.
Okay.
And I thought I saw something moving across the seat by my head. And sure enough, it was a mouse.
Oh, no.
So I pulled over, parked the car, got out, by McCollum Lake Road and Ringwood Road, which you know. And there was an old farmhouse there then, which is not even there anymore. But these two guys were coming out and headed in this direction back to my home by 120 and Ringwood Road. And I asked them for a ride, and I left my car. And I got home and called my boss, and he said, boy, I've heard some good excuses before, but this is
the
a
mouse
good
on the head
one.
Is not,
yeah, huh? Yeah, and the car sat there until my husband got home.
That's good.
Absolutely.
All right,
yeah.
I love it, Pat. Thanks for calling in. I love the very descriptive intersections in McCollum Lake and McHenry. I know exactly where she's talking about. That barn's not there anymore? That's not good. I haven't been back there, but I know exactly when she said that. I'm like, it took me a second to, I grew up in the McHenry area, and we would drive that where she's talking about, Ringwood Road, McCollum Lake Road. And, I know exactly. That's so funny that she said that. I laugh because I'm like, that's so specific. And I'm like, oh, brought back memories. 312-981-7200. I could do this all night. Just take in, and it's interesting. They do call it calling off instead of calling in, which is weird. Probably because of the email. They realized that calling in meant you had to call in and nobody wants to talk on the phone anymore. But if you have a good fake sick voice and you feel like you can show us how it's done, I think they're still opening. Because Miles is a young man and he's trying to learn how to call in sick. And you got to teach him here. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. Stay with us. Probably the best text of the night, 779. It's from Jenna. She says, hi, this is Jenna. I'm sick and I'm not coming in today. Is that a problem? If it is, call my attorney. That's how they do it now. It was so hard for me back in the day when I was a teenager working at Omni, the Dominic Superstore. I had such a hard time calling in sick because I knew that if I called in sick, they would just be calling another friend to have to cover for me. They do that all the time. But I still was good at it. Probably not as good as Debbie. So let's try Debbie. Ready? Hi. Okay. Is this Debbie?
Yes, this is Debbie.
Debbie, are you coming into work in an hour?
You know what? I think I might just be pregnant. I'm puking everywhere. I don't know. As soon as I try to get my shoes on, I feel nauseous and green. I'm sorry. I can't come in.
All right,
just hope, you know, I went out with the boss last night, and I don't want to tell him. So will you keep it between us? Just
yeah, Debbie, of course, of course. I won't say a thing. Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Okay,
thank
yeah. Thank you, Debbie. Even a little backstory there. I love it. See, 815 says Miles is smart, which I think is interesting. Listen to this, Miles. If he was good at faking, quote unquote, faking sick, then you would always wonder when he was sick if he really was. So you're holding back.
I'm good at faking a lot of things.
But the point is that you're not giving away your secrets here.
See, I'm so
here.
Fake, you don't even know what that means.
I don't. I have no idea. That's great. Okay. 312-981-7200. Debbie, that was good. That was really good. That's what you got to do. Make it personal. They're talking, then you're like, oh, all right, I'm out. 312-981-72. All right. So, yeah. So, that I don't know. We didn't get much on the football stuff. People not caring about football. I get it. I don't really care. I'm looking forward to the Super Bowl, I guess, just for the circumstance. The idea that it's a party and the idea that you're... It's just a nice little respite in the middle of the winter. I got to say, you know, it hasn't been cold, so I don't feel like it's... I don't know. It's something... I'm going to watch it. I'm going to try to muscle through, but I'm not necessarily looking forward to it. The week after, and this is what I want to talk about, is the NBA All-Star Game. Now, I know a lot of people are like, okay, why do we want to talk about the Super Bowl week? Why do we want to talk about the All-Star Game? But this week, the All-Star Game set their rosters. And, of course, it's been such an amazing and mournful and just emotional week. Tonight, the Los Angeles Lakers had their first game back. And LeBron James took a microphone and spoke to the crowd at the Staples Center about Kobe Bryant. That's tough. And the NBA All-Star Game will be a spot where all of these players who individually have been interviewed and have choked up and been emotional about the loss of their friend will come together. It's their conference. And it's something special, and I'm glad it's in Chicago. I think it's awesome. Next weekend is going to be amazing. They're dedicating the fourth quarter and the format of the All-Star game to Kobe Bryant. They're all going to wear number 24, number 2 for his daughter. That was his daughter's number. And the thing that's just, I don't know, I'm just really bent out of shape about, is that there's just not going to be any Chicago Bulls in representation. Like, we're not invited to the party. We're not invited to be part of the NBA community. Now, I get it. The All-Star rosters are all about who's the best players in the league. But you could have made a strong argument that Zach LaVine, who's the starting guard for the Bulls, has had an All-Star year. The guy's playing pretty lights out. And a lot of pundits, I don't really pay that close attention to it, but a lot of pundits say the same thing. And it's just annoying that I've seen so many All-Star games in so many different sports where it's a losing stadium, meaning the stadium that they're having the All-Star game in or the pro, whatever it might be, is the home of a losing team, but they're still going to trot out a Minnesota Twin, or they're going to trot out a Colorado Rocky, or, you know, an Ottawa Senator. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, they will go out of their way to make sure one player is there to represent the hometown guy, right? That's the whole idea of it. And this was a coach's decision. I don't know if it's the Toronto Raptors coach or whoever won the NBA Finals. And this decision was that Zach LaVine was not good enough to make the roster, and he was overlooked. Now, if you look at the skills, I think it's the skills challenges, things like that. I believe there's not a Chicago Bull represented in that. I mean, it might be one in the, I think maybe Kobe White is playing in the Futures game of some sort. But a whole All-Star weekend at the United Center in Chicago, the house that Jordan built, and there is no Chicago Bull representing any of it. That's hard to stomach. And you don't have to be a Bulls fan to think that. This is all about civic pride. The reason they're playing the game at the United Center is because Chicago is a basketball town. Because this is the house that Jordan built. They know the importance of playing in a major market and having an All-Star game here. So Jerry Reinsdorf or Gar Forman or John Paxson or whoever, or Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, ambassadors, Horace Grant, can't pick up a phone? And they can't call the powers that be and say, hey, I hope we're really considering one of my guys. Zach should be on the squad. Even if it's the last guy and you don't play him, he's got to be there for the lineups. So there's at least a Bull that's represented. And for that to have happened and they don't get it, or for it not to have happened, and here we are, it's absurd. It's embarrassing. It's a bit humiliating. I don't want to sound like a Boston talk radio host, sports radio guy. That's crazy! But I don't know. I can't fathom playing a Blackhawks game at the United Center or an All-Star game in hockey, an NHL All-Star game, without any Blackhawks. That they did the All-Star game at Wrigley Field. I think in baseball you have to have representation from, I don't know if they still do that or not. Or even at Sox Park. You imagine they're not one White Sox represented? So why is it okay? Why are we okay with that? Should we be angry at the league? Should we be angry at the team? Should we be angry at ourselves that we continue to go to this building and support the team that is so irrelevant to the NBA in the week that Kobe Bryant is going to be celebrated and mourned, and what he meant to the league and all the comparisons to what Michael Jordan meant and Kobe, all that kind of stuff, and to have it be done in the United Center in Chicago's building? It's embarrassing that there's not a Bull on that roster. No coach, nothing. Just tells you a lot. I know. 847 says, just get a better team. Don't overanalyze it. I guess. You're right. I know. At the end of the day, it's, should I be mad at the league? Or should I be mad at the Bulls? The Bulls don't put on a quality product. But then again, then I look at myself and I'm mad at me. Mad for me for being a fan of this team. I don't know. I know. I get it. I understand what you mean. Like, is it really worth me getting completely bent out of shape about the Chicago Bulls? Maybe not. But it just, you know, I still feel like this is a basketball town, and I still feel like it's the house that Jordan built. And in a way, Michael Jordan built the NBA. And if you're going to lobby to get the NBA to bring the All-Star game to Chicago, and they're going to have the whole basketball community and all those big stars here, and none of our guys are here to actually be in the game, just feels a little, I don't know, it feels like a little black eye for Chicago. Not even beyond basketball. I know, many people say, why do you care? It's sports. But it's a little bit more about civic pride to me. I would want our guys to be represented when it's going to be the biggest event next to the Super Bowl. We got plenty of guys who have Bears lineage represented in the Super Bowl. They don't play for the Bears anymore. I don't know. 312 says the rules should be changed then. Put the best player from each team on the squad. And they do that. I think they still do it in baseball. I think baseball has to have a limit. Maybe it's one or two. Remember that for a couple years it was two? They might have changed that back. But it used to be that every team was represented. And I think it still is baseball. You have to have every team represented. Because it always seems like there's a White Sox on the All-Star team and you're like, what? What? Why? Oh, yeah, right. That's everyone's got to have a guy. Like it's a little league. All right. 815 says, do people still watch the All-Star games? I don't know if they do. And I think that it's interesting because the All-Star game is trying to do a whole new format. And I think that's part of the reason is people don't really watch them. The United Center will be packed. And I think this year will be much different because of the Kobe Bryant stuff. But they're doing a different format where, and Pete knows this better now, they're going to do the first quarter, and then the second quarter starts at zero. And they get to halftime, they start the third quarter, they start again at zero. And then in the fourth quarter, they put all the scores together, right, that they all forgot about. And then they add 24 for Kobe Bryant to the total. And you have 24 points to get there, like the team that was winning, and the team that was behind has 24 plus whatever they were behind. So the fourth quarter is going to go fast. The one thing I don't understand about that at all is those All-Star games score 200 points. So they're going to score 24 points like that, and the game will be over. Then what? Then it's just LeBron James dribbling the ball around. We all kind of watch. I don't know. I don't watch it. Do you watch it? If you're watching all basketball All-Star game, I feel like that's always on, and I'm always like, eh, Bob's Burgers is new. Pete, do you watch the All-Star game?
I don't really watch the All-Star game, but I do watch all the stuff on Saturday night.
Oh, all the like skills, the three-point.
Skills and all that stuff.
Yes. I haven't watched that in years.
Always watch that.
That was, you know why you always watch it? Because of Craig Hodges, Steve Kerr, right? I remember that was a big deal. Didn't Craig Hodges win that thing a couple of times, like the three-point shoot thing with the last ball was a colored ball? Like it was all like different colors, the Globetrotters ball, and that counted for 6 points or something like that? Didn't Steve Kerr win? I feel like that was at the point where we got so excited about the Bulls players being in those skills competition, but they're not in that. Doesn't every other sports all-star program require at least one player representing each team? I know that's true to be for hockey and football. Basketball doesn't do it. It's shameful and it's hurtful, particularly to the fans. I agree. That's my point on this. I can't believe. I mean, I understand they can't do it logically because there are only 13 people on a roster. There are 20-some-odd teams. Although 13 and 13, 20. But they can't because this is the year of you got to have LeBron James and Anthony Davis. I get it. It is these kind of situations that are going to call for that next year. And it's annoying that it's happening on our watch, on our clock. And I'm not a huge Zach LaVine fan. Couldn't even paint him. They were showing him in the Kobe tributes, and it was a real close-up shot of him. And I'm like, he's got a beard like that? Like, it's just, you know, I watch enough games. And I'm like, when did he grow a beard? How fast did that beard grow? Wow, interesting. But yeah, I agree. It should be at least one player. Just we wouldn't have this issue. Especially for us in Chicago. I'm just bummed. I don't know. Like I said, maybe perhaps I'm overthinking it. But people are. Chicago needs a second pro basketball team, says 608. Competition. That would be good. But I also feel... I guess in New York they have it, right? New York and the Brooklyn Nets and the New York Knicks. And in L.A. they have it. Is that the only two, I think, that are the two-squad or two-city teams? But Chicago could do it. It's got enough population. But I don't know what the fan... I mean, obviously, the United Center, up to this year, has been all about attendance. So it's still a Chicago basketball... Chicago's a basketball town. They're still selling out the UC. This year, maybe not as much. People are getting fed up. 847 says, do we all need trophies again? I thought we were getting away from that. That's true. I'm not saying that they should honor or give a medal to Zach LaVine, but it would be nice to have one Chicago Bulls jersey out there to be like, oh, there's our guy. That's fun. I don't know. It's funny because John Sabine came in. He's the guy who's one of the Bulls outsiders. He does the NBC Comcast station show. He was talking about how there are no tickets for the NBA All-Star Game. It's not like you can walk up and me and Miles will walk over there and be like, what are we doing here? What seats are left? They sell those out to businesses and to players and teams and all that kind of stuff, and it's all done way in advance. So maybe they just don't care because they don't care that you get mad at in Chicago because we're going to watch, or it doesn't matter if you watch. I don't know what the deal is. And again, they got built-in audience on this Kobe Bryant stuff. So anyway. 708 says, if you have everybody from all the teams, then maybe you'd have more people watching because it would give them reason to watch. Yeah, agreed. All right, I'm done with my Zach LaVine rant. Thank you for participating. 815 says, change the rules so the host team always is represented by at least one player. Right? Yeah. Or just common sense. That Toronto coach, or the idea that the Toronto coach gets to pick is ludicrous. Should be the league picking. I understand the fans do the first ones, which is garbage. It's all LeBron James and garbage. But there should be at least consideration. I don't get it. You have the United Center. I'm very angry with the NBA on this one. But Dave says you can't have a bull in the All-Star game if none of the Bulls are stars. You can't have a bull in a skills competition. You see where I'm going with this. That's great. I get it. But Zach LaVine has the numbers as a starting guard. I think tonight, I don't know if they won or lost, but I saw a stat that said he has 7 or 8 games in a row over 20 points. Say what you will, they're a bad team. And maybe he doesn't have the star power, but he is definitely one of the stars in the NBA. If you watch SportsCenter at night, Scott Van Pelt loves him. He always goes out of his way to say, I love this kid. And he's fun to watch, and he's probably the best. I know this means absolutely nothing to the sport, but he's one of the best jumpers in the game. When he goes up for a dunk, you're like, how did you get that high? That's crazy. Then he misses an open shot 6 in a row, and you're like, oh, yeah, well, okay. That's the Bulls. All right, I'm done. Thank you for going along with me. I know you all believe in the Bulls, and I know that everybody wants the Bulls to be like they were. It's annoying when, I think on Chicago's behalf, that the NBA doesn't have any respect. Because it was a borderline call. They could have gone with 4 different players, and they chose someone from, I think it was the Raptors, because the coach is the Raptors guy. No. As much as someone just texted in and said, you're using too much power. I'm trying to listen to 7:40 a.m. in Toronto. Well, if you're still catching us, we're angry about 2 Raptors being on that All-Star team. Take that back to your city. All right, we'll take a break here. And Dave Flyer's coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, which is great here on Friday night. And we'll wrap up the show right after the break here, 720 WGN. All right, Pete Zimmerman sent me some Zach January stats. That's what we call it. Time for some Zach stats. This is Zach LaVine. Total points. Okay, so this gives you an idea. This is his January rankings. Entering play tonight. Total points, 463, first in the league. Total minutes, 590, first in the league. Field goals made, 167, first in the league. Field goals attempted, first in the league. 3 points made, 5th in the league. 3 points attempted, 2nd. Free throws, 7th. Steals, 8th. How is that not an all-star? Maybe he was terrible before. Nobody had a good start. What am I doing? Pete's taking me down the rabbit hole again. I'm getting all ramped up again. I'm trying to ramp down on this program. 312 says, what about the Bulls? Take it as an insult and make the playoffs for Goss State. Yeah, right? Maybe they should take it personal. Why am I taking it personal? We'll see. Well, that's going to do it for the show tonight. It's been a great week. Thanks so much. Like I said, this has been the NHL All-Star Week, and they, of course, have been off. They're back tomorrow, which is awesome. But we got the week, and we'll be back on Monday night, which we are bringing back, which is very excited, Season 2 of the Chicago Accent Challenge. If you're not familiar, in Season 1 of the Chicago Accent Challenge, you'd call up. We would have some judges who would ask you very particular questions. And if you had the best Chicago accent, you would win a prize. Then you got a chance to be on stage as one of the finalists. And you ended up at the end of the year winning $333. That was the bit. And it was great. We have tape of it. We'll play some of it. The final we did at a Northside Theater and a big crowd for that. I think it was for the podcast festival. And the winner, Jimbo from the Southside, deserved it. It was a classic Chicago accent.
Guy named Jimbo seems like it's appropriate. Yeah.
He knew what was up. But Season 2 of the Chicago Accent Challenge starts on Monday. Just like the American Idol or The Voice.
Yeah.
You can't just, you know, you got to go to Season 2, Season 3. You click Kelly Clarkson wins 1 year, you know, Carrie Underwood's the next.
This bracket thing, you're going right from that to Season 2 already.
That's right.
This bracket thing's been, it was a really good. Great idea.
How about
I loved
that?
It. Yeah.
How about it, huh? The Blues Brothers.
Blues Brothers.
That's how it should have been, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's amazing, too, because I look at everyone and all the texts we got last night, which was just amazing, and the mm-hmm. calls we got. It was today even more. Like, when I look at the people who weighed in for the Blues Brothers, it was a huge win.
When you're sitting around just flipping around channels or doing whatever and you see a Chicago movie on, I mean, do you stop for every single one of them?
I know, right?
Right?
It's so ridiculous.
Like, The Fugitive's back on again, so now I'm, like, stopping it. I've watched it 90 parts already. Over the last
Dave
like 2 weeks.
Here. Yeah, and it's funny because I said this weekend my wife is out of town, so it's kind of a boys' weekend with my son Miles.
Nice.
And I said, you know what we're doing? We're watching Blues Brothers because he's never seen it, and he's like, I want to watch it.
And I go, sitting still for 2 hours.
Yeah,
is that what it is?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I told him, I go, it's an SNL movie. He's like, what?
Yeah.
He perked up, and I'm like, it's the first Saturday Night Live movie.
Yeah.
He's like, you never told me that. He's like, I'm in. Like, he got all excited because of Saturday Night Live. He likes the Saturday Night Live.
Pour some cognac, have a couple cigars. Wife won't care. Yeah, she's not listening.
He's 12. It's all right. We can try it. What do you got on the show tonight?
I don't know. No. We're going to be Kevin Matthews. No, actually, Jim Shorts.
Oh, Jim Shorts.
Jim Shorts is joining us first.
I love Jim Shorts.
He's been doing this animated pigskin picks, like his, even since the beginning of the bear season, and all through the season and through the playoffs, he, and I'm not kidding you, has been spot on.
Wow.
Spot on.
He's so good at it.
In every call. Because he's an idiot, in for the most part, as everybody knows. And the fact that he pulled himself together for this, you know, and I want to ask him, like, why animation? Like, is he that hideous to look at now? You know what I mean? So, Jim, maybe Kevin will join us, too. And then...
How great is that?
Yeah, right?
Takes me to a place. Takes me to a very warm and happy place.
Right?
To say that Legend. Kevin Matthews and Jim Shorts are coming
right?
up. Yeah.
Right? Right? Right?
Chicago, man.
And then my buddy Jeff Rogers, he's a marketing guy. He actually just rebooted Players Workshop.
Oh, yeah, great, yeah.
And we're going to talk about the Super Bowl commercials, as we do every year. And then Jared Payton's going to join us live from Miami. I'm sure he's done talking to everyone.
Oh, my gosh.
He's been
everywhere.
He's been on every newscast. But I think Nextstar has tapped him across the country for stuff too.
He's and I think I heard him earlier in the year, maybe it was with Roe, but he was talking about that they do the Walter Payton
Man of the Year. That's what we're going to talk about.
They moved it. Now they do it Saturday night.
Yes.
Because it wasn't right before the game. That's what always blew my mind, that Jared would be on TV in some form at 4 o'clock, 3 o'clock on
They're
Super
still going to do
Sunday.
That.
They are?
Yeah.
And
so
him and Brittany are out there. That's
the
awesome.
Formal stuff.
Connie.
The formal stuff is on Saturday where they do the dinner
and the whole nine yards. There you go.
And then they get to go on the field with the winner.
Right.
And that's the big
deal. It's right before, it's right before the beginning national anthem and everything. It's so awesome. You're like, I know that guy.
And I love that they televise it. Like that, you know, they could be talking off screen or whatever. That's a cool moment. And as he said, every year it just freaks them out. Oh, to be there, right?
Be there with all those people, right? And that's when everyone's starting to tune in, right? Then are you doing a big Super Bowl party and things like that?
We're gonna, my son always invites for like since eighth grade. He invites a bunch. He's a freshman in college. He invites a bunch of buddies over. We just have a few people, but not a big, You know, some wings, some pizza, some chili. I think we're doing chili. Yeah.
Would you call in? What's your best call in sick? Really quick. What's your call in sick? Give us that. Hello, is this Dave? That's what we were doing tonight. People were calling in.
Well,
I'm
the CEO, so I just kind of just call him, tell him I'm not coming.
So do you?
But I'm ready for everybody's BS. Yeah. Exactly. I already got a guy today. I got to run this pool. You know, I'm going to be up to like one trying to fix it, figure it out. And I'm like, whatever. I said, oh, well, that's great. And I goes, maybe I could push it a little bit. I'm like, push what? Just come in early, finish it up, and then you can leave by 5. I mean, really, it's fine by me. What the hell? Bunch of bull.
Dave Flyer. Dave Flyer coming up next here on 720 WGN. Okay, that's going to do it for me, Justin Kaufman. I'm back on Monday. Like I said, the Chicago Accent Challenge Season 2. Ted McClellan, great Chicago magazine writer, but also a linguist who has studied this thing with his book, How to Speak Midwestern. He will be our guest, and we will kick it off Season 2 of the Chicago Accent Challenge. It's been a great week talking about all things Chicago and all things that are happening around us, and looking forward to coming back next week.